Everybody.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Just collected all the wort from my Helles brew about 2 minutes ago. So just letting it cool off to pitching temperature, probably gonna pop in and out and do a little cleaning and stuff.
Nice. How'd it go?
Pretty good. I got really good efficiency, about 10 points better than normal with the step mash that you posted on the blog. And then I got a recirc arm, and that I think helped really get good grain bed set, and wort was looking really clear going into the boil.
Awesome. Awesome.
Collected some wort to get sour goût going. I got a little sous vide with about 3 quarts right now, added some grain to them and dropped the pH down to like 4 or 5 or so.
Awesome.
So see how
Awesome.
it goes.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That'll be fun. Russ, I see two of you. What are we drinking today?
I got some more of the blonde ale brewed about a month ago. Still got probably 6 or 7 gallons left.
Excellent. I'm getting mighty thirsty myself.
Yeah, I think I'm here, right?
Hey, Rob, how's it
Hey.
going?
All right. My computer's been nicer to me today.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, last week I was like an hour late joining, but so.
You're plenty on time now.
Yeah.
Tim, how's it going?
Good, how are you guys?
Living the dream.
Right?
Doing well. Right, I'm gonna go grab a beer because it's time.
That sounds like a good idea. I cleaned draft lines a little while ago. I hope it's cooled down enough so I get something besides foam.
We are back. What's new, Tim?
Oh, not too much. Trying to install a bath fan.
It already all plumbed in and shit, just replacing it, or like from scratch?
Just kind of fixing it. Getting rained down with some insulation. Lots of fun. What
Yeah, that's not fun.
about you? What are you doing today?
Was a pretty low-key day. I was going to brew, but I ran out of time because I had a bunch of other projects. I make the bread, the sandwich bread for the week, and I made buns for hamburger buns for tomorrow, and had to make some pizza dough for this week. So,
ooh. That means you have flour.
I do have flour.
Which, what I have is looking like what I have for a while. So, yep. Getting.
Yeah, I went to like 3 or 4 different stores looking for flour. And then my parents ended up having some, so I ended up getting it from them. It's ridiculous.
Are they firing up the pizza oven, though?
They did last weekend.
Nice.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll see. We'll see if I get to use it this year or not.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, Russ.
Finally got it figured out.
Yeah, I'd never used Zoom before either.
I was like Zoom bombing myself or whatever that is.
Yeah, I saw two of you for a while.
Yeah. Well, I guess I drank too much.
It'll happen. Oh, Lord. It'll happen.
Is that your children squealing in the background?
That'd be my children, yep.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, so they started their own YouTube channel, and they're filming videos. And they have a massive fort in the main level with all the couches and dinner table and chair. And they all have their own rooms inside the fort where they have like their actual rooms that they decided to transport today. So they're sleeping. They're going to have a slumber party in the giant fort. So they're screaming right now and getting ready for bed.
Nice.
Yep.
At least some people are actually enjoying this situation, it sounds like. So,
yeah,
it's an adventure for them.
Yeah, you know, it was a bad day here because it was like kind of wet and rainy, so we couldn't get outside. Yeah. Normally, we can get them outside and they can, you know, blow off some steam. But today, it's
nasty.
Yeah,
I had like half inch hail at one point this afternoon. It was.
Yeah, everybody's getting nailed in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough. What else is new, everyone?
Anything? Not much. Still plugging away at the brewery.
Yeah.
Kind of in a little bit of a holding pattern with the change in seasons here, and my renter is renewing, so trying not to spend too much money. But getting ready to buy my cabinet here, my enclosure.
There you go. What are you going to go with?
Hoffman, similar in size to yours. Way too big for what I have right now, but
you'll fill
better
it.
Better big than sorry.
Yep.
So, unfortunately, I can't find a deal like you did with, I think you got yours for like $30 or something.
Yep.
Yeah, they're super hard to find.
Yeah.
I haven't found any really good deals. Trying to find one used on eBay or something like that that's halfway decent for like $100 is pretty hard. In the right size anyway. So
sure. Be sure and check like KBit, Auction Masters. There's another one that I always check too. KBit, Auction Masters, and US
or something.
Oh, it's like US power equipment or something like that. One of those three auction sites around here. I got that enclosure, my big enclosure I got from Auction Masters, which is right like Maple Grove area.
Oh, okay.
So
are they the same company that has all the electronics too?
They have a lot of auctions with that, but that's a separate company, but it's really close to that auction house.
Oh.
Yeah, really close, actually. And I haven't been back there for a while. I kind of forgot about it. I haven't bought any equipment for a while, so. So, yeah. Yeah.
So what about you other guys? I don't think I've met you before. Robert. Where you live?
Ohio.
Ohio, okay.
Yeah. And you are where?
I'm in Minneapolis, not too far from Brian. Okay.
Yep. Tim's been here many a times.
I know Russ is in the great frozen north there.
Yeah, the great frozen northwest, I think. Although we didn't have any hail or snow or rain or anything today. It was actually kind of nice.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
North Dakota, right, Russ?
Montana.
Montana, okay.
Close enough. One of the five states out here no one ever comes to.
Right. It's a big rectangle up north.
Well, if you look at the corona map, you know, where the virus hasn't been yet, that's where nobody goes. So.
Yep.
It's like the one good thing about that.
We had a super nice day here in Minnesota yesterday. It almost hit almost like 60 degrees. And
60, yeah.
And people are running around in shorts and a t-shirt thinking that, like, it's summertime. We got sunburnt. I got sunburnt, for Christ's sake. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in Santa Monica, so weather's still pretty nice right now. Getting about 65 most days, so try and go outside and hang out in the back patio area during lunch and stuff, get a little sun. Apparently vitamin D is good for your immune system.
Yep. That's what they're saying.
You guys are shelter in place in California, right?
Yeah, it's pretty strict now. I've been hearing accounts of people getting tickets for unnecessary trips and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We just started that in Minnesota as of midnight. So I haven't heard of anything on the news yet for tickets or anything, but governor was very, very stern.
I'm just finishing up the first week of shelter in place here. And they are starting to get there. There are hundreds of businesses that they are going around and shutting down that said, no, you're not as essential as you think, but I haven't heard of any individuals getting actually cited with unnecessary trips or things. People seem to be doing pretty good job of self-regulation, but.
And we were basically shelter in place before this midnight starting of everything. So like for the last 2 weeks, you know, restaurants were closed except for carry out and, you know, movie theaters, bowling alleys, et cetera, et cetera.
We had the same, that the restaurants and bars and everything were shut down. Yeah. And a lot of them had shut down voluntarily even before they were ordered. So it's kind of tailed off for a couple of weeks here. But
we had issues last weekend because a lot of people were walking on the beach and going on hikes and stuff, you know, just trying to get out of the house. But there were so many accounts of people not keeping distance that the county ended up shutting down most of the parking lots, most of the trails, like. So now they're really trying to crack down.
Yeah, oh, really? I'm worried about that. We've got to have somewhere to go.
Exactly.
And our governor said, you know, still get outside, just maintain your distance and be smart. You know, you're still okay going for a walk with your dog and whatnot.
I hear the parks are open, but if there's a playground area, you're not allowed to go on that because presumably you'll be interacting or touching equipment or whatever, but if people don't keep their distance, I don't know what they'll do.
Don't touch stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Try and tell kids that. They listen really well. Yeah. I have like three parks around by me too. They're all shut down. What are you going to do, I guess? So still try and go on walks and get the kids out and get outside when it's nice out, but the weather still isn't, it's not tremendously nice here yet. You know, tonight we're supposed to get snow potentially, so we'll see.
Basically, I don't have my hopes up for spring until it's May.
Yeah,
just speaking from experience in Minnesota.
Yeah, like Cinco de Mayo, that's when like my parents open up their outdoor entertaining area and all that fun stuff, and usually Cinco de Mayo is when you can actually spend some time outside. Pre-bugs yet too, usually. So that's good.
You guys have a party?
My parents do, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's like their official opening of the entertainment areas. They always have a Cinco de Mayo. So
cool.
Yeah. My parents don't know what to do. So my parents are super active and super they're gone all the time, whether it's vacations or or out and about in this state, another state, whatever. And they're just broken right now. They don't know what the hell to do because they can't go anywhere. They can't go do what they normally do. So my mom's like, yeah, we sat on the couch and watched Netflix all the day. That's the first that ever happened. And like usually on the weekends, we're over there pretty much 24/7. And we haven't seen them in like 3 weeks. We FaceTimed and stuff. And we're like, what, 7 miles apart? And so, yeah, it's super weird. Some people, my wife's parents aren't listening, and they're like, well, we're going to go, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. And they're not listening. But so it's interesting to hear the two sides of the coin there when it comes to that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I don't know if Easter is going to happen, whereas, like, you know, myself, my brother, and my sister, and all of her kids and family go to Rochester, and they all hang out with my parents, but they're obviously pretty old, just like your parents are, and that's not intelligent right now, right?
Right.
And my dad also doesn't know what to do with himself either. He's too active and can't work out anymore, and basically just rides a stationary bike in the basement. So
yeah, it's crazy. I don't know. What was I gonna say? Oh, I can't remember what I was gonna say, but yeah, see, you know, for us Midwest folks, it doesn't really faze us until it starts to get nice. Like if this happened in the middle of winter, I think everybody'd say, oh well, who gives a shit, you know?
Yeah.
Because we don't go anywhere and we rarely see anybody anyways. So, but now that it's getting spring, now it's real. That's a real thing. We're finally itching to get out and we can't. So
speaking of not being able to work out, have you got your put on your quarantine 15 yet?
No. Actually, I've been losing weight.
Because, really?
Yeah, because, I mean, I have my workout area in the basement here. And so what I do is, like during my work day,
mm-hmm.
every hour on the hour, I'll come down here and hit the elliptical for 10 minutes. And so like at the end of the work day, I'll have 80 minutes of cardio on the elliptical in where I normally wouldn't. I'd just be sitting at my desk, you know? So no, it's actually gone good.
I have some rusty weights that I'm going to have to break out here. I'm very used to going to the gym.
Yeah. See, I don't have that luxury because I can't get away from the kids. So all my exercising anyways is either in the morning or at night. So, and then I do it here. So whatever.
Yeah.
Gyms are overrated. Hey, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. How are you?
Not bad.
How's Scotty?
Not too bad. Getting my fill of beer and staying at home.
Working on the brewery.
Yeah, I just finished up. I did my first 5-gallon batch today. Kind of maxed out the system, and I think I fried one of my pressure sensors because the grain and everything got into it. So I got it washed out and dry. We'll see tomorrow. If not, I'll just throw in another one.
One of those like air, water, oil sensors, or like the actual.
The actual air sensors, like the small ones for the, they use them on the brake calipers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, one of them. So,
yeah, we'll see. I have good luck. Like if I get one clogged and it starts reading all wonky, I'll like spray it out and then hit it with a bunch of CO2 or nitrogen to dry it off and blow it out. And they seem to come back. So,
yeah, that's what I figured. I'd give it till tomorrow. I got it sitting upside down to dry out and everything. So. We'll see. If not, I got a few spares. I got plenty of spares of everything.
You have to.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. You have to. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I run or bike a few extra miles a day so I can drink more.
There you go. That's a solid plan.
Yeah.
My problem is I'm not that disciplined. If I drink during the week, I'll want, you know, two or three. And so most of the time during the week, I just have none. This is my first one I've had. Well, I had one last night, but otherwise it's my first two of the week. So,
yeah, I typically don't drink at all during the week.
I was not drinking during the week until all this shit started. I was pretty disciplined with that.
Yeah, that's tough.
Now, I've always been really terrible about intentional exercising with equipment. I mean, to me, there's being really active is one thing, but doing something contrived is another. Aside from I don't find hiking and stuff like that contrived, I enjoy that. But being so much less active, I've noticed I've kind of automatically adjusted to eating a lot less. I might have one really good meal in the day and not, you know, if I'm not doing anything, apparently I've at least got that going for me. My body's telling me you don't need that.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite. If I'm active, I don't eat anything. But if I'm not active, all I do is sit around, eat and drink.
Think about it.
No, I didn't say I was drinking less. I'm working.
Yeah, definitely. Always cut the food before the beer.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I go and right when we first shut down or when I first had to work from home and I hadn't came up with my little elliptical gig, I ran into the same thing where I didn't really leave the house, so I wasn't really doing anything. And it was like, well, I'm not really hungry. And I would do the same thing where maybe one meal a day. I always skip breakfast no matter what. But then it was like, oh, maybe I'll get a little bite to eat for lunch. And then I wasn't hungry for dinner. And so, yeah, it's crazy how that works. You know, how your body can just know that it doesn't need that. Yeah. I try and teach my kids that, but they're just like, ravenous. They can't ever get enough food. I don't understand that, but they're growing. So yeah. What are we drinking, Dan? Some wine?
Yep. It's the weekend. It's Saturday. Taking wine.
There you go.
I think I drink more wine than beer.
I can't get into it. I can't get into it.
Dan, what are you drinking?
Huh?
What are you drinking?
Oh, I got the kind of bougie today, the Grand Puy du Casa.
Bougie.
Yeah, pinkies out. I just love Bordeaux with steak. So, luckily, I brought a few hundred bottles home with me when we left Germany, so we got quite the supply of wine.
Nice.
When were you last in Germany?
Would have been we left, let's see, now August of 2018.
Okay.
So we're headed back. We're going to go on vacation, hopefully, this winter to hit up the Christmas markets in November, December time frame.
Nice. I've been there during that time. It's amazing.
Yeah. The Christmas markets are our favorite time. So we wanted to get back and check it out, meet up with a bunch of old friends, see my landlord I got really close with, and drink copious amounts of Bitburger.
Where were you when you lived over there?
Right outside of, maybe 10 minutes out of Bitburg.
Okay.
So it was a little town called Bottom. So just maybe... We lived the first, let's see now, two years we lived in Bitburg, and then we moved out to this little village. So, and then we went to Japan for a little while, and then when we moved back into Germany, we moved right back into our old house that we were in last time. And I was, like I said, I was really close with our landlord, so he moved us right back in.
Nice.
So you move around for work?
Yeah. Not anymore, though. I'm stuck. Hey, next time I move is 6 feet under in a box. I'm done moving.
So you're from Wisconsin, though?
No, I'm from South Dakota.
So, oh, okay. Where are you in Wisconsin?
Right outside of Madison.
Okay. I used to live in Madison. Where are you at?
Cottage Grove.
Okay. Yeah, I have some friends there.
Yep. Yeah, it's perfect because we live right on the edge of town. So I got an acre of land. My backyard is what was a cornfield and just got deer roaming around. And I got a little shooting gallery out in my backyard. So all the squirrels and little shitheads that come in the yard, I can just shoot.
Nice. Yeah, no, I loved Madison. You could drive a few miles outside of town and be kind of in the middle of nowhere. And then if you wanted some civilization, some city life, you know, it wasn't too far away.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that Capital Brewing still there?
Yeah. Yep.
Is that any good anymore?
I've not had it. I'm very I don't try a lot of the beers around here because I'm always disappointed. So typically I'll drink the Great Dane as a small brewery here. They got maybe three. It's a microbrewery with a restaurant. They got, I think, three locations, and their beer is just spot on. So I drink that and New Glarus. And I've actually fallen in love with the champagne of beer, Miller High Life. So I did the Miller Brewery Tour, and that was the first time I ever drank Miller High Life. I was made fun of my uncle who drank it. And that beer is so damn good. It has such a good taste to it.
We were talking last week about the weakness. Last week, I remember, a lot of us confessed a weakness to the macros.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So is the comeback in still kicking? Hanging on by a thread?
The what?
The comeback in.
What's that? I'm not familiar with that.
It's a German restaurant in Madison.
Oh, it's
House connected to it?
The Essenhaus. Oh, I ate there on my birthday. This is going to bring up a sad story. I ate there on my birthday last year, which is Easter this year, April 12th. So it was so bad. The schnitzel was just horrible. The Bitburger was money, though. So this year I booked the Maters in Milwaukee, and I was so excited to go there, but that ain't going to happen now that everything's shut down. So I'll just sit at home and eat schnitzel and drink beer.
Yeah, I know that place is just hanging on by a thread. You know, it's a really old building. The business isn't doing that well, and they really want to just bulldoze the whole thing and build a really tall condo building right in the lake there.
Yeah, and they had the plans. It was all set up. Actually, my wife's work, they were in the bidding for that whole area because they were going to set up shop there, and then a condo won the bid. And then it was all over the news. Everyone was so sad and everything. And then maybe a month later, they said, oh, well, we're not going to do that anymore. And the Essenhaus was staying.
Good. That was an act of God.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in the news every single day for like a week. People just protesting about it and talking how terrible it was. Like I said, the beer is good. The food is horrible, though.
I always liked the food at the Comeback Inn. I never really liked the food all that much at the Essenhaus.
Yeah. Yeah, I never ate at the Comeback Inn.
Oh, like my God. You got to go breakfast, man. Breakfast.
Yeah, the Bitburger.
Stuffed French toast. That's amazing.
Ooh, stuffed. What is it stuffed with?
It's like walnuts and like cream cheese and like with an apricot glaze.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. You're speaking my language.
What's up, Derek? How are you doing?
Good. How's everybody doing?
Living the dream.
Just getting real familiar with the interior of my home.
Oh, yeah.
I've actually ran out. I've been so busy for the last 3-4 months setting up my new brewery and everything. I've come to a stopping point yesterday, and I didn't know what to do with myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have focus and a goal, right? And you just, mm-hmm. like, plow through, and then all of a sudden it stops, and you're like, now what?
Yep. Luckily, after today, I got a whole list of stuff I got to do now, so I'll be busy again.
I hear you. It never ends.
No, not at all. I think every time I make a list and then I just sit and, oh, this would be nice. Oh, why don't I put this? Or if I said this to myself, it'd work out perfect. So then I make the status update of what I wanted to say. So I don't have to think about it.
Yep. I got my system now all condescending and shit. It's like, ask me questions and then it'll say, just because it knows, like, I know I, as it asks me questions, I just blow through and hit continue. Mm-hmm. Now it's saying like, are you sure you want to continue? Did you really? Like, son of a bitch. No, I didn't. All right. So, yeah. So
that's like Netflix is like, you're on your sixth episode of Jeopardy in a row. Are you sure you want to continue?
I get that too. Are you still watching it? Yes, I'm still watching it. Why would I not be?
Okay. Hey, George. Everybody. George says hello as well.
So speaking of Netflix, has anybody watched The Tiger King?
Yeah. We started watching it last night, and we didn't want to go to bed.
It's crazy.
It's crazy awesome.
It is good. It's super good. It pulls you in.
There are people like that. You talk. That's a. There's a broad spectrum of humanity out there. Let's just say that.
We haven't seen it, but we saw it. We were finished, or we started the third season of Ozarks last night. And as we were shutting off Ozarks, that was like, hey, before you shut that off, hey, you want to see this? You want to see this?
Yeah.
Like, oh God. Yeah, we do.
Tigers, check. Murder, check.
Crazy
guns and shit. Check. Guns, yeah.
Well, what's the premise? Like, he was like a veterinarian or something like that, or what?
No, he's one of many of these like podunk, like wild, like large cat breeders in the United States, and they have like these zoos where you can come see them, but they make their real money by like breeding tigers and selling them to people.
But all their money is only with like the kittens. Like, yeah. you can take these kittens that aren't harmful, and sure, people pay hundreds of dollars to pet them and take their, you know, selfies with them. And that's where all the money is. Once they're big cats, you know, nobody can play with them anymore. Yeah. So, you know, they did have like a couple hundred tigers, but, you know, all the money is with the little kittens.
So we were watching it, and there was like people who were at these parks, and there was a lot of people turning their backs on like gigantic animals. And I understand that they're not in the wild, but I mean, you're talking like however many hundreds of thousands or years of, I'm going to get that neck and kill you in one bite, to be turning your back on them is kind of like, I get that you're exhilarated, but.
Didn't I see something like in the movie where like one of the handlers gets her like arm eaten off or something, and then comes back like within a week or something?
Yeah, she does.
Oh yeah.
They got this kind of, cause this guy, like, he films everything. He was like, I don't know, like back in the day, like when they first started with like reality shows and stuff, he like made a decision. He's like, I'm just going to film everything I do, from like eating my Cobb salad to like with the cats and everything. And he's in there, like they get this lady, they send her off to the hospital, and he goes in the office, and he's like, oh, I'm never going to recover from this financially. Okay. Yeah, okay. Maybe that's a thought you have, like, way down the line. But like I said, we're talking about an unseen segment of human the country, for me at least.
Wow. Is it down south folk, or are they all over?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, yeah.
Where the lady was.
You can see Florida. Florida's kind of like a whole nother world. So, Oklahoma as well.
I never knew that about Florida. The north part is just straight up hillbilly redneck. That was a big surprise for me, because as a kid, we used to go down to Florida, about the Orlando area, and I always thought it was kind of fancy and sophisticated. And then I've met some people from the northern part of Florida. I was like, what the heck is wrong with these people?
Well, that's not Florida. That's Disney. That's Disney World.
Yeah,
that's
like
that's a whole other universe.
Yeah, L.A., Lower Alabama is what they all call it. And I'm like, I'm from L.A. I'm like, I'm from L.A. or from Florida. Lower Alabama.
My God. My grandma, so I have one grandma from Austria, and I have my other grandma's from Alabama. And my grandma from Alabama, we don't know how old she is because she lied on her marriage certificate when she married my grandpa, and she can't remember how old she actually is now at this point.
So she probably lied because she was not of legal age to be married, correct?
So we are trying to put the time that we have every time we get together, we have these like thorough discussions between everybody, like how old is grandma? So
she's still kicking.
Oh, my grandma's super young. Go figure. And so so we're pretty sure we've got it sorted out to where she was between 14 and 15 when she got married to my grandpa. Now, she said she was 18. My grandpa was down there for the Army, and he was an MP, and he was actually doing a whole bunch of stuff with Wernher von Braun. He was on the guard duty for Wernher von Braun when they picked him up. And so he was down there in Alabama with that and doing stuff with that. And they met on a double date. And she said she was 18. He was 17 because he joined the Army early somehow. And so we're not exactly sure how old she is, but we're pretty sure she was around 14. So, but now it's gone on so long that she doesn't even know how old she is. So,
no birth certificate.
Nope. So,
she born at home.
What's that?
Was she born at home?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, no doctor came. So, no birth certificate. No birth certificate.
Yep. No, yeah. They were like dirt floor houses, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was. Yeah.
My parents were all born at home, but when my mom was born, she has a sister a few years. They're both gone now. Everybody's gone. But when my mom was born, a doctor did come and deliver her, but was so drunk that he put her older sister's name again on my mom's birth certificate. So technically my mom was never born, but her sister was born twice.
So it was a different time then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So yeah, my grandma, we think, was like 16 when she had my mom. So my mom just turned 60. So my grandma would be 76, roughly. We don't know. Between 72 and 78, we'll call it. I don't know.
You said your mom just turned 60?
Yeah. Yeah.
She had you pretty young, huh?
20. She had me when she was 20. So, no. So not too terribly young, but.
My parents are older than your grandparents.
yeah. Yeah, no, my grandma's a really young. My grandma is a really young grandma. So my kids have a really young great grandma. And so, like, they were just this morning, they were playing Facebook games together. So it was crazy, but
nice.
Yeah. So no, that's good. But yeah, you never know what's coming out of Alabama. I gotta go get another beer. I'll be back.
Russ, are you still with us? Maybe not.
Yeah, I'm here.
What have you been up to?
Not a hell of a lot. Being retired, I pretty much do exactly the same thing as I've always been doing. So this lockdown thing doesn't make much difference to me. I still hang around the house.
Isolated already.
Pretty well used to it. So.
Yeah, I realized how little of a social life I have. Because nothing has really changed. It's just like business as usual.
I assumed that I had no social life, and now under lockdown, I realize that I'm a little more sociable than I gave myself credit for. When I do start to miss humans,
I
you know,
The only difference between now and like maybe 2 weeks ago is that I have to like be like, is today Wednesday? Oh, it's Thursday. I just lose track of days. That's all.
I keep telling my wife every day is Monday. It just feels like a Monday. Like the same shit. Like you really don't want to be doing it, but you have to. So it just feels like a Monday. It's like every day is a Monday.
I was the opposite. I thought every day felt like a Friday because you get to sleep in and kind of go at my own pace and log in the computer, do a little bit of work to feel somewhat useful, and then go do my own stuff.
Yeah, well, see, normally that's my every day, but now my whole family's home.
Yeah.
So now it's like nonstop shrieks and screams and fights and saying to shut the goddamn pantry door and get out of the snacks. And yeah, get outside. Yeah, so now it's more, I do more work now than I was, and that's no fun.
So how does it work with school? I mean, like, do they go to school on the internet or what's going on?
Well, so that starts Monday.
Yeah.
Also, they've been just, it's been a free for all. Like they've been doing whatever they want.
Yeah, it's spring break.
They're on spring break.
Yeah. So my kids went on spring break. Oh shit. I think like the first week in March was their spring break. And right when they got off their spring break, or right when they were supposed to go back to school that Monday, that's when our governor said, nah, and shut everything down. And so they've basically been going on the spring break, and whatever Monday is that the first, the second, first, 31st, whatever it is, they're supposed to go back finally. So, like, my wife is a teacher, obviously. Tim, you know that. And so they had to work this last 2 weeks to get 9 weeks' worth of lesson plans digitized and ready for the students. And the students had to go pick up their workload with 9 weeks of assignments and all that kind of stuff in a folder last Thursday and Friday. And then the teachers, they're doing like a hybrid of like Google Classroom and some other stuff. And so basically my wife we set her up in the office here, and she has to sit at her computer for 8 hours a day and basically answer questions and put out like lessons. So she started her own YouTube channel, and she's been streaming all her lessons to the YouTube channel. And every day she's got to teach a lesson just like she was in school. And the kids they can see when the kids view the stuff, the material, and then they have, somehow there's some kind of app called like Seesaw or something, where they can do it on their iPads or on a computer and digitally turn it in to be corrected. And so then they got to go and correct all the work and send it back out. Just basically do everything you would do in school over the internet. So, but that's tough because Kate has to do that, but then we got to teach our kids too. So we got 3 kids we have to school while. So I'm not sure how it's going to work. It's going to be interesting. So.
Yeah, my kids are technically about to start spring break. So it's been, let me see. I think. So
Timothy or Brian, you guys been back to that Utpils at all? How's that place doing?
I haven't been back there in a while. They're doing pretty good.
Yeah, is the beer still about the same?
It's okay. I don't think it's as good as it was.
That's too bad.
I think they're kind of straying from their original German or European style brewery, as they call it.
They realize people just don't care. They'll drink whatever swill.
Kinda.
Sad. Where's that at you're talking about?
It's a brewery in Golden Valley.
That Dan's been
there. What's the name of it?
Oudapils.
Oudapils.
Oh, Oudapils. Oh, okay. I'm very familiar with that area. My whole family, well, pretty much except for my mom and dad, everybody lives in Minnesota somewhere with a good majority in the cities. And then the other half probably right around Fargo-Moorhead area. So I've been to Eudapils a few times, but I make it up to the cities probably every few months.
Yeah. I mean, I would say their best beer is probably their Hefeweizen.
Yeah.
See, I never had that one.
Yeah. Oh, really? I would say that's easily my favorite beer from them. And, the only beer I usually get if I go there.
Generally speaking, they overhop their lagers.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I had their Kolsch. I wasn't too crazy about it. Definitely didn't taste anything like a Kolsch should taste like. But
no, not at all.
That's expected in the U.S. I've yet to find a Kolsch that is somewhat decent.
Spotted Cow, right? Spotted Cow's a Kolsch. It tastes...
not even. They made a Kolsch. What was it? Kid Kolsch?
Something like that.
Oh, that was... I mean, it was a decent beer, but it was not a Kolsch. It wasn't even resembling a Kolsch. But the beer was... I mean, it was halfway decent. But.
Tim, did you see the Shells? That Shells new beer?
No. Huh?
Okay. So they posted a picture on social media yesterday. So, or the other day. And it's a blonde. Okay, so it says, like, Shells Blonde, okay? And then, like, it's in big, bold letters, Shells Blonde. Right underneath that, it says, a Kolsch. And so in social media, they have it in a wheat beer glass. And so I was like, it's a blonde Kolsch in a wheat beer glass. What do we got going on here? They're making a cream ale too. Did you see that one?
Yeah, but they just called it classic. There is nothing on the can that says cream ale. It just says classic, and at the bottom it says ale. And I remember I had to do a little bit of research and go to, I think their original post where somebody in the comments asked, what the hell is this actually? What is this, you know, style? Yeah. They said it was a cream ale. I'm assuming they're just, you know, getting on the Castle Danger cream ale bandwagon.
That and like the, and they didn't they have that like double dry hopped lager? Oh, God, what was that one too?
So for the guys that aren't in Minnesota or Wisconsin, there's a brewery called Castle Danger that makes a cream ale that's extremely popular. And I think people are just kind of trying to, you know, hitch their wagon to that and steal some of their business.
I don't know how people have the energy to like, I got to try this thing and this thing and this thing. It's like, I like five things. I only want to drink like five different things.
I used to do that when I was living. My first time we were in Germany, we're really close to the Belgian border. So my buddy and I used to drive over to Belgium and we'd spend every weekend we'd drive to different places in Belgium. And I just fell in love with their beer. And then this last time I went back, I don't like it anymore. I mean, it's not that I don't like it. It's just, I just need a Pils or a Kolsch.
And I'm yeah. I can go back and forth pretty easily. So if, you know, like I told Brian a funny story the other day. So like every once in a while, the distributor will be at the store when I go. And, you know, like one time I was taking sixers of W and checking out the date and I'd look at it, I'd put it back. I'd like take a couple down, put them on the ground, look at another one. And finally came up and he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm checking the date codes. He goes, how do you know what it is? I was like, well, you know, such and such, this is the date, you know, this is when it was bottled basically. And I was like, this stuff is like a year old. He goes, oh, really? And I was like, yeah. I was like, that's probably why it doesn't sell, because people buy a sixer of it, it tastes like crap. And then even though it still probably tastes better than you know, a year old bottle of, W original so. Probably tastes better than, you know, but even so, I was like, he was like, really, that's how old it is? I was like, yeah. I was like, there's some stuff back there. Like I used to get them where they'd have like a Corbinian that was like 3 years old. It just had like two layers of dust on it. Like it had like an old crusty dry layer of dust with a fresh layer of dust on top of it. And it'd be like, this stuff is old. You gotta not getting a good turnover on this. But the Trappist stuff in the stores is always, granted I buy a lot of it, so there's a big turnover, but even so.
You are the turnover then.
Yeah. I mean, my grocery store has the beer, like there's no real, where I grew up, they had beer stores. So you could go and you'd be like, you couldn't go three blocks without finding like a beer and discount store. But where I live now, only the grocery store the grocery store has the best beer selection in the entire area. And so like right now on the shelf, they have, you know, there's West Mall triple double, all three Chimay's, all three Rochefort beers, even the six, which is like incredibly difficult to find most places. Duvel, they get all like the, the roundabout, like the other regional Abbey beers. So like Gulden Drach and Pirat and all the St. Bernardus beers. So it's like, and that stuff keeps on the shelf. So that stuff could be a year or two old and, to me, it doesn't make a difference. I like it fresh too, but it's almost better if I go to reach.
Still good, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been craving the West Mall triple, but I can't find it. I could drive the other side of town, but I'm too lazy to do that. But
oh man, they got bottles and bottles and bottles of it.
Year or so. But I still haven't made it to the other side of town to pick it up.
They had a lull for a while where like I couldn't. I basically bought it all up and they didn't restock for a long time. Yeah. And then, but at the time they were getting a bunch of fresh lager in. So like I was getting, like month old, W pills and original, and they were having like real fresh cans a bit, but the lagers have dried up. The stuff they're getting now, like they're getting like, what's the Schwartz beer that Bitburger does too?
They have the Kostritzer.
Yeah. I get that. That's pretty much the best one around right now. And that Monshoff, that other, with the flip tops, they get that pretty regularly. There's a big, I don't know who's buying it. I'm not buying it all the time. Somebody's buying it enough to turn it over like once a week. And that stuff's usually pretty good. But I've been on a real dry spell for like light lager, German lager.
You're lucky. If I want to buy it, we got the new Glarus. So like the Two Women is my go-to if I buy a lager. So I just love that beer. It's so
good. Yeah.
I've been drinking a lot of Guinness, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. Guinness Extra Stout. It's been treating me well. I've been getting the bombers of that. Just because with buying the house, I've been trying to like not spend too much on beer.
You know what's super good with a Guinness? If you want like a little bit of like a dessert or a dessert beer, if you want to call it that, you take a shot of port wine and you put it in the bottom of a Guinness or Chambord.
Yeah.
So good. It's like you put Chambord in there. It's like chocolate raspberry cake. I'm not kidding. It's so good.
I just had some, I'm never going to remember the name because they only had it for like a couple of weeks, but they had this, Polish beer for a while. They had this Polish, brewery was making they had an Imperial Stout and they had, like a cranberry,
Creek or something?
Huh?
Like a creek?
It was like, what's the high strength porter they make with the lager? With lager yeast.
Oh, Baltic Porter?
Yeah, it was like a cranberry Baltic Porter. This Polish brewery made it. It was really, really, really good. They got them around Christmas, and they must have only got. I can't remember. I'll have to look it up, and then next week I'll.
They're huge into beer in Poland. I've been there quite a few times, spent a few months there, and they love their beer. Like, they're very snooty tootie about that too, because my buddy just wants to drink beer, and we're at this beer bar, and they got me 20 drafts on selection, and he's like, I just want something that's good. He goes, well, what beer do you want? He goes, I don't care. Something that's strong and good. He goes, well, you're going to be that way. I don't want to serve you here. It's like, God damn.
Well, that's what I always find funny is like, so I live close to there's a Budweiser plant actually. Like you can see the smokestacks from where I'm going to be living now. And so you can get like, it's not uncommon to get like week old or 2 week old Budweiser in the stores around here. And yeah. I've been to like a pizza joint around here and been like a bottle of Bud. And I don't, that's the funny thing is like, you talk to like a lot of us here and you'd be like, I'm not personally afraid. Like if I went to a barbecue, I'm not going to be like, if somebody gives me a Bud Light, I'm going to drink it and I'll order a Budweiser at a pizza joint. And it's not something, you know, I don't even think about that. It's just, to me, it's like, it's made well. It may not be the most flavorful thing in the world, but it's made well. It's consistent. I could go to Mongolia and get a Budweiser and it's going to taste like a Budweiser.
You know, have you guys seen that documentary, King of Beers, Budweiser?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty good. I put everybody on it that didn't see it last week too.
Yeah.
And it's thanks good. For, I couldn't remember the name of it. How could I not remember that? But now I'll check it out.
Yeah. I mean, you can find it on the internet for free. I forgot what website it was, but if you just Google it, King of Beers.
I remember it being very, I like anything where you get into like, you get on the inside and see like how they're doing stuff. I'm a geek like that. So I like to see the inner workings anytime I can. So stuff like that always intrigues me.
Well, yeah. And they pull apart those individual beers. Like I know I never could, you know, and they probably would all taste exactly the same to me. So.
Well, I told, I'm trying to think like maybe it was like a year ago or a year and a half ago, me and Brian were talking. Cause there used to be an old Miller plant in Fulton, which is like up the highway from me, like 45 minutes. And what's there now is there's an ethanol plant, a Sunoco ethanol plant. But the brewing campus for the old Miller plant was so humongous that these local guys went in and, you know, when they started the whole Farm Brewery Act in New York, and they started a malt house there. Cause there's hundreds and hundreds of acres on this property and all huge old industrial buildings. So these guys got a grant. These guys got a grant from New York State and just went and got this, you know, state-of-the-art German malt house, basically. And I went. I called them and I was like, "Hey, I see your stuff on your website, and I'd like to get some of it, but you're only selling in bulk." The guy was like, "Yeah, just come up." So I went up. He gave me a tour of the whole place. Gave me a 50 pound sack of grain for nothing, just for. I don't think anybody had shown any interest in it at all, you know? And they were just like, yeah, come on up. And he was like, yeah, showed me the whole building, showed me the system. They had a lab there and that's kind of stuff. I love that kind of stuff. Right. And nobody ever asked. These guys have probably been operating for like a year and nobody was ever like, hey, I'm interested in coming to see what you guys are doing up there.
Nobody wants to see behind the curtain.
Yeah. He was like, oh, really? And I was like, yeah, if you have the time, I'd love to just get some grain. You don't have to show me around. And he was like, oh, no, I'll push you in. He was like, I was there for like 2 hours.
Cool.
And they loved it. That's the kind of stuff that interests me. I love seeing what everybody's doing. And I just like industrial stuff.
Yep.
Especially after working at the nuke plant. You know, that was... You get to like big rotating machines and industrial type stuff. It's just, I can't claim to understand all of it, but it's just the magnitude of it all is always just super interesting.
For sure. I'm the same way with RAR or BSG, well, RAR, whatever you want to call them. They have quite a campus going on too. And, you know, they have the laboratory, they have the pilot brew house, they have, you know, the actual malting facilities. Just to take a tour of that whole plant is cool.
So cool. Third largest malt house in the world.
Yeah. It's
last time I checked anyway.
It's quite the campus. I mean, you drive up to it and it's kind of, you know, it's in a city, it's in Shakopee, but not really, well, not really a big city, but it towers over everything. I mean, you got railroad tracks coming in, going out, you have huge, just towers and malt houses, and it's crazy.
Yeah, I drove by that on my way to you this summer. It's pretty impressive.
Are you wearing your swag too?
Yeah. Got it. Yeah, Russ, yeah, you saw it for the first time this summer too, yeah.
Going to BSG too. Never saw so much brewing shit in my life.
Yep. I mean, even their warehouse. So like the warehouse where you pick up grain is like, I don't know, like what, a couple city blocks?
That thing's huge.
Floor to ceiling, probably 50 plus foot ceiling stacked with pallets of Vireman and every other grain you could ever want to see. It's
and all super fresh too.
Yeah, that's some crazy stuff.
I mean, they're
probably have an adequate supply of. They have an adequate supply of barky to get us through this situation. That.
Yeah. They are.
They have like a year's worth of inventory on hand at all times.
Yeah, I wonder how much they do have. I mean, they're the sole importer, so I don't know. All I know is when I went there the first time ever to pick up my grain. It's difficult to navigate because they don't really tell you where, and you can't really get directions to, like, you can get directions to BSG or RAR. But it kind of takes you to like to the center of the 20 city block area of the campus, and you really don't know which way to go. So the first time I was there to pick up my grain, I pulled up into a parking lot, and I didn't know where it was or where I was going. So there was a building there. I hit the buzzer on the building. Someone said, hello. I said, I'm here to pick up grain. And they buzzed me in. And I opened the door and I'm smack dab in the middle of their laboratory. No one's there. There's like probably 100 different microscopes, and there's a grain room, and they got like sieve tests going on. So they got sieve shaking and they got all this shit going on. And, no one's there, so I wander through that whole laboratory. I come out on the other side. I'm like, well, I don't think I was in the right spot there. Hit the next building. I buzz, and they didn't even ask. They just buzzed me in. And that was the, like, pilot brew house and that kind of area. And I walked through there, and I'm not sure how big their brew house actually is there. But I would say it's probably at least a 10 to 20 barrel system. So it's not terribly small. And so I'm walking through the pilot brewery and no one's there, and there's some offices, and there was someone in his office who must have been like the the head brewer for the pilot brewing system. And I said, I don't think I'm supposed to be here, but I'm supposed to be picking up grain. Do you know where I'm supposed to do that? He's like, oh yeah, across the street. So across the street is their giant warehouse. So what they don't tell you is, like, the brewery pickup is like at the far, far, far end on a little service door where you hit a buzzer. And so I just went to the first door there was, and they buzzed me in. And it was kind of right in the middle of this warehouse. And I remember going in, and there's like a man cage, or like a cage. And so you get buzzed in, and then there's a cage where you have to wait until someone else buzzes you in, because you're like in the main warehouse. And I'm pretty sure somewhere I snapped a picture of it, but as far as the eye could see in either direction, floor to ceiling was pallets and pallets and pallets of fireman malt. Thousands of pallets. And it was mind blowing to see, just to see that scale.
But they're the sole importer of Wireman malt to the US, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I've been wondering about supply chain in this situation. Because as soon as, I don't remember if it was before or after the 30-day travel restriction, the first one that went on with Europe or something, I went to my local shop and ordered extra sack of Barkey pills. And so I thought, well, you know, shipping is going to be disrupted at some point. But that sounds encouraging. But on the other hand, it seems every sack I get is very fresh, like manufactured within the last couple months. Yep. So I just wonder what is the turnover? How just in time have they been operating? Is that deceiving, the quantity that you see there? Does it actually turn over pretty quickly? And
it's gotta. I mean, so the interesting thing was, I think if we rewind back to like 2016, I think it was in 2016, the Barca malts were only available to commercial brewers, and it was just kind of getting its feet, its stride, hitting its stride. And like, the only reason I got turned on to it is because Bierstadt was just opening, and Bierstadt said they were only using Weirman Barca malts. And I was like, okay. And we had done a bunch of research to the head brewer there, Bill I. And he seemed like a guy who was kind of like a no bullshit guy. And so if he said they were only using, and then, so where he came from, I think he came from Prost Brewing, and people said the beers were very true to German style there. And then he leaves to go do Bierstadt. Bierstadt is getting rave reviews on their beer quality and all that kind of stuff. And so we find out he's using the Weirman Barca malt solely. That's all he's using. And so I was like, okay, well, at the time we still hadn't figured out that the whole low oxygen thing, we were still thinking it was an ingredient or a component that we couldn't get as brewers. And so we see this malt variety that this guy who seems to brew quality German lagers is only using. Homebrewers can't get it. And so there's this elusiveness. And so we're like, I was sorry, I was just reading the chat. And so, then I reached out to get it. Well, so BSG is carrying it. BSG won't sell unless you have a commercial brewery account. At the time I didn't. So I petitioned, I know a lot of the guys at Northern Brewer. So I petitioned Northern Brewer to get a sack for me. And they said, well, we'll try and get it. I don't know if they'll give it to us. And I said, I don't give a shit. I will pay whatever price it is, just get it. And so they ended up getting it. And then I think I got the first bag. I got the first bag available to homebrewers somewhere in 2016, I think. And then I petitioned Northern Brewer and BSG to start carrying it. The Northern Brewer was the first one who started carrying all the Barca malts. But honestly, I don't know if there is a high demand for it, to be honest. I mean, I know that a lot of people use it and they love it, but I don't know if like local homebrew stores are actually stocking it or if they're just ordering it, you know, like on demand type basis. Like you walk in, you say, I want a sack, and they say, okay, we'll put one on our next order. But I don't know. I know
my guy gets a pallet from BSG every week and he'll throw anything you want on it. But I don't remember when it was. It was definitely after that 2016, but I don't remember how soon after. He asked me one time, he said, hey, I got this guy, and I've never met this guy, actually. I've never crossed paths with him. I don't know who he is, but he's another customer. He said, I got this guy who's ordering these Barca malts. Do you know anything about him? I said, well, I think I've heard something, read something. There was, you know, something on Wireman's website or something. I said, no, I don't know anything about him. He says, well, this guy, he works at the Ohio State University Ag Station. He's in grain breeding, and he's a home brewer. Mm. He must know something. I said, yeah, well, you know. So, but, it, you know, this is a couple of years later when you guys started really touting it that I finally decided to try it. But I was the last time I was in and ordered – it sounded like this guy and me are still the only two customers that are getting the Barca malts from my shop. So, which is actually a pretty high traffic shop. So,
sure.
I'm surprised that it hasn't taken off more, especially if Northern Brewer has been selling it.
I don't know. For the longest time on that one, I was stuck on floor malted Bohemian, and I just love that stuff. And then I decided out what the hell, I bought a sack of it, and first beer I was like, god damn. And I've been using it ever since. And then I just picked up 3-4 months ago, last time I was in the cities, I picked up a sack of Bohemian pill, and I can't wait to finish it because I need the Barca back.
Anything is out
here. I think one more batch and then I'm done with it.
What was that, Russ?
I was like, out here you can't even buy the regular W or the Wireman pneumatic pills. It's all Barca.
Really? So,
wow.
Yeah, everybody's adopted it pretty much whole hog here.
God. Hey Dan, if you ever, I wouldn't recommend buying a whole sack, but it would be interesting. I used to be a fan of the floor malted Bohemian too. And then I accidentally got a sack of the pneumatic Bohemian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I liked it better.
Really?
Interesting for you, if you've used a lot of the floor malt, maybe it's just that there's better control over the malting. Maybe they can, you know, get on target a little bit better with the pneumatic. I think floor malting is just a little bit gimmicky at this point.
I'm so with you on that.
Yeah, that it sounds artisanal, but it doesn't allow the maltster to get the most out of the grain necessarily. But but if you ever come across it, you know, if you don't have to buy a whole sack and try the pneumatic Bohemian,
I back in 2000, I want to say it was 16 when we were trying all these different malts because we thought perhaps it was a malt that was, you know, giving these flavors that we were looking for. I tried a sack of the floor malted, and that's right when Wireman took over that Bohemian malting facility, wherever it was. And I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was some malting facility they took over that was producing that floor malted malt. And I got a sack of that. I don't know if you remember, Russ, if you were around then. That shit was horrible. It was later found out that it was full of spores and mold and all bad. So I had some sacks of it. Kit had some sacks of it. And that was the last I tried that because that made just an insipid beer and we couldn't figure out what that, it tasted like. It tasted like if you went out to a field and there was baled hay and the baled hay sat all summer and you tore into the middle of that bale of hay and you would get like that musty, dank, kind of nasty smell. That was the taste and smell in the beer. And it was horrible. And we were like, what the? And so we just thought that's what the floor malted was. And turns out it wasn't. It was just some tainted lots, but I got burnt on that. I got burnt on a couple sacks of Best Best Malt's Pills that was full of acid malt.
I remember that. I remember troubleshooting that with you.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I've only ever been.
Sorry, go ahead, Derek.
Go ahead, Rob. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say one thing I really do like is the Floor Malt Bohemian Dark, which is an interesting malt because it's around the color of Munich 1 or maybe the Barky Munichs. But to me, it just has a drier flavor, less of the caramel and that you can sometimes get with the regular Munichs. I like it as a specialty malt, and I also have the last few years been making a Märzen out of 100% of that, and it just sort of splits the difference between a Vienna and a Munich, and it's a really interesting malt.
Yeah. Which malt?
That's the Weyermann Bohemian Floor Malt Dark.
Okay.
The Floor Malt is not, I think, an issue. I think it's just the
sure.
The specs they have on malting a dark
malt. That dark malt to me, I played around with that quite a bit too. What I got from that was kind of exactly like you were saying, where it wasn't like caramely sweet, but I got tons of dark fruit from it. Mm-hmm. Prune, kind of. Do you get any of that? Like the dark fruit that you would get?
Yeah, I like it because it gives me the things that I like about a Munich malt without the things that I find can be overpowering.
Sure. Yep, I would agree with that.
No. I'm liking the Barke right now, but it might get old at some point and I might go back to the Bohemian as my go-to dark malt.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's why they make different malts.
I've only ever been able, so basically the base malt I've always used is the pale Pilsner, because that's the only light Weyermann base malt that I can get in my, I could always go and order, you could order whatever I wanted, right? But it was the one thing I started with, and I'd always just liked it. And for me, it doesn't make as much of a difference because most of the whatever they call it. I think the premium. Yeah. And that stuff, for me, you get the pills flavor, and I don't really need the color because most of the stuff that I was doing anyway, I've got it, either Special B or Cara Bohemian in it and some dark sugar. Pretty much every beer that I've brewed is either, if it wasn't a pale ale, it's a dark. It's pretty much a dark Trappist type of beer. That stuff's always been really good. Although I imagine that if it was brewing the kind of beers that you guys are brewing regularly, it would be very light. I think that stuff is like between like 1.5 and 1.7. But
I think it was even lower than that.
Not light. Yeah, it's lower.
Yeah.
Five or something. But yeah, that's super bright.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that I would have to order a sack of, and I'm not going to do that.
Oh, yeah. That's the one that my local place carried. And from the time I started out, they have the Northern North. They pretty much have the other normal range of Weyermann. They have the Vienna, both Munichs, every specialty malt they make. But the one Pils malt they have is that pale Pils. And I guess I just got used to it. And for me, it's not a big deal because I'm making up the color other places. So I get that. I get the Pils flavor, but I know that I'm going to either put some dark syrup or a super dark specialty peat malt in at a couple of percent, 3 to 5%.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that malt's kind of like best Heidelberg then.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, that stuff's lighter. That stuff's on the lighter end. Now that you say that, I didn't even really think of that. Yeah.
So Nick had a question about Fest beer and pills. If there's a good grain combo. Well, I can tell you off the top of my head. Well, let's just say this. Is there a certain beer style, let's say like is like a Pollaner or like an Eingerfest beer or W Fest, a Weinstephaner Fest beer.
You know, that it's a good question. And so I think every year I play with something different, whether it's rye or a different pils malt or even a different yeast strain or a different temperature. And so, you know, in Minneapolis, we've been working with Mighty Axe hops a little bit too. And so I'm kind of lining up my post-quarantine to do some Pilsner beers with different hops and different keg hops in the Pilsners. And so, but I'm always game for a different malt strain that might sit better with a hop, you know, except, you know, we might get Comet, which is a little more melony, and maybe something that's a little more towards Munich that might play a little bit more towards the sweetness versus something that's a little bit more towards a bite is always interesting. And so that's kind of the, you know, the area that I'm sitting in is always interested in what a malt combination with a hop combination might really, they accentuate each other. You know, if we really get down to it, the hop, the yeast, the malt, the what we choose accentuates each other. And so I'm always interested to hear what others have done. And so if there's something that maybe I don't have that I need to request, I want to make sure that I request that.
Sure. You're asking the wrong guy for that. I'll defer to the rest of them for hop combos. I'm super, like, you know, when it comes to my fest beers and whatnot, I'm super traditional. So we're using nondescript hops. Maybe a mid alpha hop, you know, like a pearl, for like a 50 minute addition to 24 IBUs or 22 IBUs. I mean, it's pretty bone dry as far as like new hop varieties and stuff. I have some Mighty Axe in the freezer here. I was going to pull it out but I thought it was stupid. So, I don't know as far as, you know, a lot of the Mighty Axe hops are plays on traditional hops, right? So you got your Tropica, which is what, like Cascade? Is that Cascade? Something like that? Yeah.
So, I think that's what it is.
Yeah, and then you got your other ones that are like, I think they have like a Centennial variety maybe, and then... So I don't know. That'd be interesting.
So what I'm thinking of doing is I'm limited in volume. So one by one doing a Pilsner, but because I've kind of found this pattern of keg hopping with the Pilsner for a couple of weeks works really well, is keg hopping with a different variety from them too. But having the malt backbone to actually support it is something that I want to make sure that I have properly before I decide to go through like four hop varieties.
Sure. A few years ago, I did a series and this was before I was doing low oxygen, obviously, but I did a series of Pilsners just for kind of fun summer brewing, where I tried various, not the thing of the moment American hops, but typical things that you would think of more in American pale ales, IPAs, you know, Chinook, Cascade, even some Simcoe. You know, I don't remember all the ones that I went through, but a bunch of varieties. And I found it was interesting because some of those that you find very pleasant in ales are very unpleasant in a Pilsner, and vice versa. Some of them I don't like, I thought played better in that. So it's probably just something that will be interesting for you to go through and try that and then report back. And
yes,
maybe as I I'm going to go get a beer and maybe grab my notes, see if I can find old notes back then and see what the malt, because I did a basic base recipe that I was just changing out the hops in. So I grab a beer in my notebook and, yes, and see if I can see what I was doing.
I was at a beer fest in Belgium. Funny you say that, how, like, for me, Saaz is my go-to hop. I got who knows how many kilograms sitting in my freezer right now. But I was at this beer fest in Belgium, and they had a IPA there, and it was 100% Saaz and dry hopped with Saaz. And I drank it, and it was horrible. It was one of the worst beers I've ever drank. And it just was awful.
Yeah. No, I confess, I don't do a lot of experimenting with that. I'm one of my quirks is that I'm a whole cone devotee. So it pretty much means I buy the best quality, freshest American grown hops, because you can't get very many decent quality imported whole cone hops. So I just go with the boring, you know, the Mount Hoods and Willamette, Liberty, you know, the basic lager hops of the Northwest, but which is kind of why I did this experiment.
Exactly. And
just to get out of my comfort zone and see what, and I thought a Pilsner would be an interesting way of teasing out the qualities of the hops. Yes. And it is funny how differently they play in combination with the different yeasts and fermentation.
Exactly. And I really, yes, it's kind of it. And exactly. And we have a relationship with a local hop farm in Minnesota. And so, and that's kind of what Brian was teasing on is, yes, there is this kind of, there's the terroir, but if we take like a really classic Pilsner style that we understand, I guess is the way to go for it, towards like a pale ale or an IPA. But if we take it towards like a Pilsner style, and what does that kind of treat it like a finishing hop, like an American Pilsner maybe could be, or like a modern American Pilsner.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking to do with this hop grower. And exactly what you were doing is like, what happens if we treat it a little bit differently and we treat it as very late addition, but with this very clean fermentation of a Pilsner and you know, this Pilsner malt, and yeast that is going to present a more clean profile than getting in the way of worrying about an American yeast or an English yeast or a Belgian yeast. That's what I'm kind of looking at doing. And so that's kind of the question that I have is, I haven't completely built out the beyond just like a completely bohemian Czech, you know, like completely Pilsner forward malt bill, and then presenting the hop as a either a late addition or a keg hop. That's my concern.
The New Zealand Pilsner thing is kind of very much in the same vein of what you're talking about. They're kind of those fruity, floral, whatever hops, and those have gotten really popular. So if you're not familiar with those, it'd be worth looking into a little bit. I'm sure a lot of the homebrew sites have all sorts of recipes and experiences with that, where they're kind of very, very hop forward.
Yeah.
What's that big one in New Zealand? Is it like Motueka or some shit like that?
Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce any of them.
Yeah, there's this small brewery on the coast in Belgium. It's Pennepot. And they were huge on just crazy shit like that. And they brewed I want to say it was a blonde, and they used 100% Motueka. And that was a really good beer.
Yeah, I can't say I've played with any of those hops.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm
sorry, did you say it was a Belgian one?
And then there's Fran.
Yeah, what's it was Pennepot.
Yeah, I think it was because
or
I
Destroyed.
Just...
Destroys Brewers. Pennepot is one of their beers.
Right, because I was just reading up today that actually Motueka was called Belgian Saaz, so that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I never heard that, but I guess I could kind of see the similarities in it.
Yeah.
How are you doing, Fran?
Pretty good. I was just wondering how the hell is already so late at my place. Then I realized that we got a clock change. So,
You're even further earlier. We'll call it earlier for you. It's earlier for you.
Yeah, it's like 3:30 a.m. That's so stupid.
Where are you at?
I'm in Croatia.
Oh, they got good wine there. I love the wine there.
That's not bad.
The Plavac Molly, is that how you say it, or how the hell you pronounce it?
Damn, you know.
I know wine.
Damn, it's Plavac. So C is like a T, TZ. So it's it literally means little blue one.
Yeah.
Because it's got small, tiny blue grapes.
Yeah. Yeah, that wine is amazing there.
Yep.
You brewed today, Fran?
Yeah. I brewed a Rakow Pale Ale. What's that?
Some New Zealand hops right there, right?
Yeah, I just bought it from... So these Slovenian guys, they have a crap ton of hops, and I think that, you know, it's traditionally, they grow a lot of hops in Styria and Carinthia and all that stuff. So they also import a lot of stuff. So I wanted to try a single hop thing, and got tired pretty much when I finished. So I fell asleep accidentally. And that's why I literally just woke up and I was like, fuck. And then I realized, oh, it's you guys are chatting here.
Yeah.
It's 2 weeks in a row. You woke up in the middle of the night and joined us. That's great.
Yeah. It's not a bad thing to do.
What else are you going to do, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Joey Chestnut. I don't know. My next beer, I'll sample an L17 beer, and I'll try and explain it. How about that?
Awesome.
It's tough to explain. I don't think there's any good words to really say, no. Like what it tastes like, except for August dinner. So we ask that a lot lately. What the hell does it taste like? I have no way of describing it.
So really interesting. So I have two beers that I brewed with L17. One was a Helles that was the first fermentation study I did in the bioreactor. And that was, you know, traditionally fermented. The Helles, I think it was a 90% Pils, 10% Munich. Pretty basic Helles. It was fermented right around 50 degrees, you know, all was fine. So that has definitely a signature flavor. Then I just recently last week fermented a warm fermented lager with L17, you know, because the philosophy folks say it's all the rage. So I tried it because I'm not one to poo-poo without doing. So I tried it, and plus it was an easy way to grow yeast for the upcoming beer tomorrow. And so anyways, that beer has the flavor too. But now here's the curveball. I'm not sure if it's the yeast, because I've also been doing a shit ton of other things. So I don't know. And when I say a shit ton of other things, I mean like yeast deoxygenation. I don't think that would have a flavor proponent, but that's a change. I use sulfites again. because I'm trying to get more data points. So that's a change. What else? I think there was like three or four other variables that I changed. So I'm not sure if it's, I don't know. I don't want to chase a false positive is kind of what I'm saying.
But so what I can say is I think that it works best with Halas and not quite as well with pills. Because with pills, you want kind of like a clean, you want clean grain, you want, you know, clean hops. You don't want anything else in there really. With a Halas, you know, with the sourgut, this yeast works really well with sourgut. I mean, it's very complementary. If you ever had an August dinner, like Edelstoff, it's a combination of all those flavors. So, I mean, if that's what you're headed for, I think it's a really good yeast for it. Also, temperature, you know, the higher the ferment temperature, the more of this flavor you're going to get. So, and it comes down to whether you like it. Some people like it and some people don't. And a lot of people ask, should they use this yeast or not? And it's like, I don't know. Do you like this flavor? Or do you don't?
Sure.
And that, you know, you either got to have an August dinner and decide if you like that or brew with it and decide if you like it. So that's what it comes down to.
And if you want a fresh Edelstoff and you're not going to go to Germany to get it, go to Wolfgang Puck's restaurant in Vegas. And he gets it flown in fresh every week. So there you go.
Definitely.
And at that restaurant, you can also get
the Austrian beer. What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Stiegel?
Stiegel, yeah.
Oh, not the beer that, who's that American? Eric Toft is the head brewer there. He's American.
Oh, you're talking about Schoenrammer.
Schoenrammer,
yeah.
Well, you can get Schoenrammer.
Most of the conversation.
Don't waste your money on that. Just get the Edelstoff. Buy two or three bottles and take them to go.
Yep.
The Schoenrammer Helles is money, but their pills is more of an IPA or a pale ale than a pills.
Yeah, it's a straight, like, Whirlpool late hopped IPA. That's exactly what it tastes like to me.
I think I got.
We have an interlude. I checked my notes, and on those experimental American hop, looks like I was doing basically pretty much an 80-20, but I was using regular Weyermann pills and the Bohemian Dark. But that idea of the 80-20 to give you a little bit of good malt underpinning for the more aggressive hops probably is not a bad strategy.
Sure.
Yeah, I got it right here. Schoenrammer.
Oh, nice.
I knew I had some.
Have you been? Did you go to the actual brewery?
Yeah. Yeah. So we went this last, everything goes. So last time, or our last winter in Germany, we went skiing down in Austria again. And we got to drive through Salzburg. And, you know, it's right maybe 20, 30 kilometers off the Autobahn there. So we swung over and had quite a few, and then my wife drove us to the resort, so it worked out perfectly.
There you go. So the last time I was at, what the hell, Russ, what's that restaurant's name? It's a short one-word name. Eat, raw, fresh, what the hell is it?
Where is it?
Wolfgang Puck's restaurant there.
Oh, shit. You know, I don't remember the name of the place.
God.
I can walk right to it, super drunk.
I walked in there. They said, do you have a reservation? I said, nope, I'm going to the bar. Walked into the bar, got two Edelstoffs and got a couple Schoenram beers. Asked for a to-go plastic cup and signed my tab and walked out.
Yeah, $48 later.
Yep. Oh, God, what was it called? Oh, now I'm going to have to look it up.
The Cut?
Is it? Yeah.
Cut, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
I knew it was a short one-word restaurant.
That and the Hofbrauhaus. That's the only place you can find good beer in Vegas.
My favorite person in the entire world is at the Hofbrauhaus Vegas, and that's that one-man band there. That guy is a machine.
I like that chick that walks around and smacks people with that big wooden paddle. That bitch has got quite the wind up.
I got. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've only been there once, and that's all. That's pretty much what I remember, because one of the guys had recently got promoted, so everything was on him that night. And we kept getting shots, and the next day my ass was so sore from that woman.
When we went there, most recently, I go there usually every year for work, and I have a whole bunch of slow-mo HD videos of her winding up and wailing on people, and you can see like the ripples in their and like the people's asses and stuff. Like, she, there's no mercy given. There's no mercy.
Man, you think? Yeah, my wife actually won the competition there. We're holding up the stein, so I forget what she won, but we still got the picture up in our office. I always think of it when I see this.
Yeah, so that one man band guy had to be there then, because he's the only guy that's there. And if you've ever watched him, he's got about no less than probably 24-liter steins full of beer around him at all times, and just hammers them down while he's playing any one of a dozen different instruments. He's a machine.
Like, is he one of those guys that just like opens his throat and lets it rip?
Yep. Full liter, you know, maybe like 5-7 seconds, whatever it is. Humanly impossible. He does it.
He's I don't know if you guys remember. Do you remember like Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel? Was it the Man Show?
Yeah. The guy that played the piano.
Yeah. And like he used to just like have one in each hand and just rip them after he was done playing. That was awesome. I forget the guy's name.
Fox. They called him Fox. That was a big deal when I was in college.
Nice. He's no longer with us, but
yeah, imagine that, right?
Go.
He looked like he was like 95 at that time.
Yeah, he was old then. Keep making noise, Dan. We all want to look at your beautiful side pole faucets.
Oh,
there.
Oh yeah.
My bad.
No.
I'm moving from the wine to the beer.
Dan, feel free to give us a tour. I'm interested.
So that's the
baby.
Is that all on top of a keezer?
It's two fridges I converted into kegerator.
Oh, sure.
And then, cool. So I built this entire thing right here and then put them, hickory wood top.
Now from that angle, I see the two separate fridges. That's
yeah,
a simple way to do it.
Yeah. So, and then I'm going to put the same on this bar top. I'm going to put the hickory top because it's just a shit laminate in here now. So,
where's the tank Nova?
Oh, it's right here. Yeah. Right
there. The tank Nova.
I just wish it was real. So.
Awesome. Mm. Those faucets are so beautiful.
Yeah, they took me quite a while to get them at a reasonable price. So.
One of them's lit up. I can't see what it says, though.
It's the Pilsner Crawl one.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Do you have all three of the pours down?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I even got a sign to show how to do it. So there we
are. Nice.
Can you see?
Is there really a difference, like in the taste, or is it just
I don't know. There's a distinct taste. So one, the carbonated, what is it, the I forget what the one is, but the one where it has no head on it, it's just really carbonated. And then you have a Ladinka, which is the just normal, you can drink so much of. And then you have like the Melniko, or I don't know how
Melniko.
To know. Yeah, there you go. And it's just, it's like if you were to pour your beer from a keg and it's not a balanced system where it just pours all foam, And then you get that flat beer is what that one tastes like. But there's a distinct difference between the three.
Right.
That's my weak spot. Whenever I find a tank bar, I ain't moving from that place for the rest of the night.
That's one thing that I wish we had here was tank beer.
Yeah.
I was actually, like, disappointed. It didn't, like, I tried the unfiltered one, and I was so excited for it, and it was just, I don't know. It just didn't deliver.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was in Barcelona Craft Beer Festival, and that's like the main thing that I wanted to try, and it was just, maybe I expected too much.
Yeah.
Do they have Estrella in the tank too?
No, it was just straight up tank.
I think my parents, I know we talked about it last week, they went on a big cruise through Italy and then into Croatia, whatever that hip hopping spot is over there by you, and Dubrovnik, something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
They were, I think they were drinking Estrella or something. All these bars they were hitting up had Tank Nova systems for that. I have to look at the picture. Maybe it wasn't Estrella. It was something, though.
Tank Offness or Tank Novas or however you pronounce that. I've never seen them with any other kind of beer in Europe, only Pilsner or Kel. Speaking of which, nice glass.
They have them in Poland. What's the name of that? I got a cup. Let me check. They had it on the tank there. I think it was Poznan.
Because you got to have the whole system in the trucks, the special tanker trucks, and the dudes to come out and put the liners in and fill them. So, I mean, it's not like regular beer.
Yeah, and then they're checked by the breweries randomly to make sure that they're keeping up to date. I got to run upstairs and look at it. I can't remember the name of that beer.
It's a great idea. I wish they'd do that shit here.
Yeah. Let's see if I can find it. I'm looking right now.
Especially the liner, because it doesn't make any difference what kind of CO2 you really use, you know? Right. So, I mean, it's going to be the same beer at every bar. Let's see
here. I'm just looking here.
It was Tisky. So they fill, this is a half liter, fill it up. It was like not even, maybe $1.50. And it was out of the tank and it was pretty damn good. So you drink three, four of them, it's even better.
Polish beers are awesome.
Let's see here.
I just realized maybe when I gave my report on when I found my notes, the man who wants to know was back looking over his brew about the American hop pilsners. I was basically doing an 80-20 pilsner, and I was using, for the Munich, I was using that Bohemian Dark that I was talking about. But something along those lines to give you a good malt underpinning for those hops.
Yes, thank you.
I was using 80% regular Weyermann pills and 20% of the Bohemian Dark, because that was the combination I was real high on at the time. But anything along those lines might do the trick.
Mm-hmm. Perfect, because there's also, you know, we get, so Minnesota here, we have easy access to like American Pilsner. But then there's the Weyermann and even the Barque version of, so, and the Barque versions I'm really a big fan of. but I don't want to do that with an American hop forward accent versus like a malt forward accent, like a really good fest beer. I want to kind of save those, the Barque, the Viennas, the Munichs for that versus kind of the.
You don't want to go super light all Pilsner malt or the hops will right. just overpower. So you
yeah.
have a little bit of Munich 20% or so in there to give it some.
Exactly.
Maltiness, but not necessarily sweetness.
Yes. Yeah. Especially since one of the hops, Comet, I think is kind of a sweet. I think it gives kind of a sweet essence. And so I don't want the malt to be the, I want it to show that hops can present sweet versus just like the malt present sweet. Like the, there are hops that can present a sweetness to the profile versus yep. just the malt. So yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. Thank you very sure. much.
And we'll look forward to your reports.
Yes, yes. I'm still looking. I know it's Estrella. I know that for sure. I'm just looking for the actual picture right now. Let's see here. So what else? What's everybody drinking right now?
Got a Dunkel, which I planned for the beginning of spring as my nod to back in the day when all the breweries came out with a so-called Bock.
There you go.
In my day, it was Genesee Bock.
Oh, baby. Right next to the Genesee Cream Ale.
Oh, yeah. Those were go-tos back then. I understand that they are still made. Even the Bock is still made and everything, but they apparently don't get much distribution outside of New York because all the shelf space has been taken over by shit.
Sure.
I got a buddy who is from upstate New York, and that's all he ever talked about was the Genesee Cream Ale. So.
Jenny Cream Ale, yo, man. That's the thing.
Even Fran knows it in Croatia.
No, actually, funny thing, I used to live in Rochester, so that's why Jenny Cream Ale was our go-to beer for college kids.
There you go.
The Jenny Pounder, the 16-ounce bottle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're so well-traveled, Fran.
I will claim I'm probably the IPA drinker of the evening, and so this was supposed to be Vinny's special blend from Russian River.
Yep.
And so I dumped almost all of it into a keg hop, so the bag also creates some nucleation points, but it's interesting. It's kind of like Pliny the Elder, but maybe a little sweet. Especially it's getting on in age. I think it's probably like 6 months in age now. Okay. But it's interesting for the keg hopping to kind of present a sweetness more than a greenness, I think, in their hop selection.
It's nice. Funny people talk about all these IPAs, East Coast, West Coast, and so forth, and I have no idea what they're talking about. German beers, you're talking about milkshakes and all these other things. I have no clue.
Or no, ignorance is bliss.
Bee house or whatever the hell everybody talks about incessantly trying to copy. It's like, what's so special about that? I have no idea.
I'm drinking a pale ale right now, so. I had my Helles, so the next beer I'm gonna have another Helles, but it'll be that L17. So we'll see how that goes. But
your favorite?
Yeah, we'll see what it's all about.
But I think like pale ale. So now at this point, pale ale and kind of like the English bitter are probably as much as people like the milkshakey. Quote unquote milkshakey IPAs, like that is that's probably the next turning point though, and kind of like, oh hey, actually try like a real pale ale or a real bitter, or God forbid, a real mild. And do like, hey, here are some different things for you to try.
Sure.
It'd be cool to see. Like, it's hard to find good English style beer. Like, we have a couple breweries around here that supposedly do English beers and they're okay, but they're not.
Dustin, I can't remember. Where are you located?
St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
So how soon until we go full circle and then go back to everybody drinking craft lagers?
Well, not until somebody makes one that's drinkable.
I think if you pull the actual brewers, I think a lot of the brewers right now are drinking lagers.
Yeah. They just don't want to admit it.
Well, I think they do. Here's the problem and why I could never have a brewery is because you got to brew beer. Well, you don't have to, but I think I went into this last week is that if you want to maximize profits, nearly instantaneously, you brew to what the masses want. So in that case, it's like freaking hard seltzer at this point, mm-hmm. and you just got to brew it. But, you know, the brewers don't necessarily like it. And that's where I'd have a problem with that. I'd brew German lagers and say, if you don't like it, don't come here. But that's not necessarily the best business model. I know some people are doing it, but.
The brewers versus I don't know if I want to call them the average drinker.
Sure.
But like the taproom drinker. So they're the brewer, everywhere I go, the brewer wants, like, they're drinking pills or Keller pills is probably the big one right now, or EPA. But then like what's going on in the tap room is the hazy IPA, or even my friends that are like, hey, we should start a restaurant and you should brew. And I'm like, anything that I want is not going to be the like hazy thing that you all want. I'm going to want to brew Oktoberfest and Fest beer and Pilsner all year long, and y'all are going to want a yeast starter. And that's kind of like the homebrewer geeky dork, but it's like versus what the brewers want to drink versus what the popular taproom attendees want to drink is there's definitely a line that you have to jump across. And I think that's one of the hardest things for like a hobby brewer versus a professional brewer to very much say, hey, this is something for my brewers, and this is something for the people who are coming into the tap room. Yeah. Sorry, that was my rant for the evening.
Oh, no, I help a lot of brewers in Minnesota and other places, and they don't necessarily love it that they got to brew double dry hopped hazy IPAs and sweet, whatever, dessert beers, and now the new fucking push pop, whatever that shit is. And the fruited Berliner by sour, whatever. And they don't like that. So it's tough. I mean, but you're in a customer service, customer forward business, and you got to do what you got to do.
That's a big one is the sours. I was at, this is maybe a year ago now, but they had a new brewery open up and I actually saw their brew setup and I was kind of impressed. So I figured I'd go. I went there. It was a Sunday afternoon. It wasn't too busy, but everybody in there is like, oh, you're going to brew a sour. You're going to brew a sour. You're going to brew a sour. And I was talking with the brewer later on. He's like, all these damn people want is sours. And then we were talking. He's like, you know what? I just want to brew a damn Oktoberfest beer. I was like, come on over to my house.
Yeah, it was funny because I brewed an Oktoberfest with two, well, it was actually three breweries this fall, and it was a collaboration Oktoberfest, and two of them refused to, they wanted to brew it, but they weren't going to serve it at their tap room because they wouldn't sell it. Yeah. And so the one brewery sold it at his tap room, and his partner, his not partners, his crowd, we'll call it, are all double IPA hazy boys, and he ended up selling out of that Oktoberfest faster than any beer he's ever had on tap. So
I think that's a big thing, is people think they know what the customer wants, but when you brew, like for instance, Spotted Cow, it's a simple beer, but everybody drinks it because it's fucking good.
Right.
And that's what a lot of these shit breweries are doing, is they think, oh, we're going to sell what the customer wants. Well, if you brew a damn good beer, they're going to drink it because it's fucking good.
Well, I think the problem is that the customer doesn't even know what the customer wants.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so the customer is basically uneducated, which is fine. And they're just going to chase trends. So if you don't really know, you don't really know what you like, you're just going to follow what other people like. And so, you know, if you don't get exposed to these other beers, you're just going to drink whatever everybody else is drinking. So it was an interesting experiment as far as, you know, the brewery that served it. And he said he had people, now they're going to make it yearly because people requested it so much after that it was on tap. And it was a
normal. That was the Pollinger one, right? It was, what was it, 90 or 70-30, if I remember right?
80-20, yep.
80-20, okay.
20, yep. And so it was a good beer. I mean, it was different than I normally make, but we did as much as we could do. It was a solid beer, so yeah.
That's my go-to. I love that beer. It just, I got to get rid of this Bohemian Pils and go back to Bark. That's going to be my first one I brew, so.
Yeah.
Because this Bohemian Pils, it does not go good with Munich at all. It's just terrible combination together. But I brewed the actually, that's what I brewed today. That 5-gallon batch was a 95.5.
Sure.
And it is so damn good together. And then with that yeast, I'm loving that, the 2105. But with the Bark, I don't like the 95.5. It's just missing something.
I agree. I don't, if I'm using the Barca malts, I go Munich. Yep. So that's pretty much where I land with that.
So, maybe that's something about why I like the Barca malts, because I've just never been a fan of Cara anything in much anything, except a little bit in a Dunkel. Sure. I don't like them in pale beers. And so it's something that works well for a Pilsner Munich blend, those varieties.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's why I'm not too crazy about Helles. When I have a good Helles, I absolutely love it. I was at Ryan's house, was it back in springtime maybe? Oh, and I had your Helles, and I think I said, this is Tegernseer export beer.
Yep.
And as soon as I had it, I was like, God damn, this is fucking amazing. And it's just that I had the same thing at Schoenrammer when I had the Helles. I'm not crazy about the style, but when I have one that's good, I was like, God damn. But I never remember, so.
Yeah. That's kind of like my Helles is like my go-to daily beer. You know, I always keep a Helles and a Pils because they're like trying to pick a, you know, my favorite child, which is my daughter. But yeah, so it's tough, you know. I mean, just got to do it right, and then it's delicious. But
that's how I am with Kolsch. Kolsch is my go-to. I always got to have Kolsch on hand, and you cannot. I have yet to taste a beer in the U.S. that is labeled Kolsch that tastes anything like a Kolsch.
Amen, brother.
Amen, brother.
That does not exist.
Kolsch, Cole, sorry. So I'm gonna ask for a pause on Kolsch. Yeast strains on Kolsch, because I feel like I have a Kolsch strain from whether it's Fermentis or White Labs or Y Yeast.
Yeah, they're different.
Yeah, they're all different. And I'm having a hard time with a Kolsch strain and a malt combination to get that slightly sulfuric Kolsch aspect to it. So sorry, I'm totally intercepting the Kolsch conversation. Just because I know I have three Kolsch strains, and trying to think of how to compare them to each other properly and get like that real cleans but slightly sulfuric but not butterscotchy aspect to it. And I think it might be more malt than yeast strain.
You're saying you have the different yeast varieties, or you mm-hmm. have the different? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So is what I've found is I've tried with the 100% Weyermann Kolsch malt. That's all you need for a real Kolsch. You get that true Kolsch malt taste too. But going with the different yeast strains, it's a totally different beer. I've did the 25, 65, 25, 75. Shit, what's the...
Dieter? Dieter?
No, that's the one I haven't. That, the only one I had was at your house. And then I had the... what is it? Shit, I can't
029.
Remember. Yeah, the 029. And then the... there's one other one. Was it L7?
Was it Dieter?
No. I might have it.
Imperial Dieter is supposed to be something like...
Yeah, Dan tried Dieter at my house.
Oh, 44. I forget who makes it, but the 44.
Oh, that must be White Labs, right?
Yeah, no, not White Lab.
No. Like 1040, maybe 1044 Y East?
No. I think it was L44, if I remember right.
Oh, from like Imperial?
Yeah.
Oh,
that would be right.
But that one is supposedly out of shit. Can't remember what brewery it's out of.
I will just interject while you're looking into that, is that I will almost go to my grave to say that the Weyermann Cologne malt is a pils malt and a caramel blend. I will fight tooth and nail.
I agree 100% with that, because I've tried it with by itself, and it's perfect. It has that slight taste that you get from a caramel.
Yep.
And if you put that 5% caramel in there, it's too much caramel. Yep. And then with 15% Vienna, it's too much also. Yep. It's just 100% is all I brew with it.
So, can you throw that into the chat so I can grab that real quick?
Sure. What do you want?
My favorite is 8515.
Yeah, and the malt blend, because I think Kolsch is kind of like, I know that a lot of people don't like Hefeweizen, but I think it's kind of one of those where the malt accentuates the yeast more so than people think. And so like the malt blend for a good Kolsch, not just the yeast strain, but the malt blend to go with the yeast strain. So like a good malt blend there that like you were talking about to go with would be beneficial.
Yeah, so the Cologne malt as is 100%. That's what I've been brewing with for quite some time. That's what Dan brews with. I swear to God, Weyermann is blending that with either, and I would go out on a limb to say that it is blended with Cara Red. That's my guess.
Really?
That's my guess. It's got a, maybe, it's definitely not Carahel. It's to me, it's more sweeter than Carahel. It's somewhere in between, Carahel and Cara Red. So I don't know if they're blending with a custom Cara malt in there, or if just in their kilning of that malt that they're getting some of those extra glassy, those glassy kernels.
You really think it's a blend and not something done on the kiln? Because
I'm
sure they could do it on the kiln too.
I'm sure they could, but it tastes like a Cara blend. Like we went through a big string a couple years back where we were making what we call these country Helles, mm-hmm. where these country Helles have tons of Cara malts and different things in them. And I remember tasting, and I can't remember for the life of me what the blend was, but I remember tasting it and thinking, you know, okay. And then when I had that cologne malt, it just like sent up a flag in my mind that said, oh my God, this tasted like some kind of pills and Cara blend.
When you see different colored, you know, kernels in the blend.
Yep.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, let me go grab one.
Yeah, there is a slight different color in some of the kernels. But it was the Omega yeast, and it was supposedly it's the Reisdorf strain from there in Cologne.
The only Kolsch malt that I'm familiar with that like my local shop carries is Schill. Has anybody tried that and compared
it to? They discontinued that, and that was supposedly bought out. Brian had told me that was bought out by Weyermann. Yeah. So the Schill Kolsch is Weyermann. And I forget who I was talking to, but I brewed one beer with that Schill malt, and as soon as I drank, I was like, God damn, this is that taste that you get in Cologne. And then it was discontinued, and I could have got it, but it wasn't fresh. And then I bought a sack of the Weyermann, and as soon as I tasted that, I was like, yep, that's the same damn malt.
So you think it's the same? And it might have been a blend even back when it was Schill.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking at the malt right now. I just went and grabbed a handful here. And, yep, I got little darker kernels. Not a lot. In my handful, I would say maybe like something like 5% maybe or different colored. Not a lot, but enough.
Wild.
Hey, Russ, you said 8515 was your favorite. What are you doing with the 85? What malt are you using for that?
I like just regular, you know, pills like Weyermann Pneumatic. Or if I'm going to use Barca, I like to blend it down with like rar pills, maybe like 50-50 or something. Barca is just a little bit, for my personal taste, like too much.
Yeah, because I did the 8-5-50 for quite a while with that one, with the bark pills.
And just, I mean, like a regular...
too strong. It was good, but it was
just a pills and a Vienna, you know, nothing too crazy.
Yeah.
That to me, I tried the Kolsch malts, I've tried Schill and Weyermann's, and to me they're just a little too dark and a little too flavorful. I don't know why. You know, they just don't feel like cologne to me. Cologne seems a bit lighter.
Were you playing with temperature in the fermentation in those, or really just like the kind of the malt like that? That extra darkness that gives that caramelly.
For me, temperature is kind of huge. You know, if you don't get it right, it's like 64, depending upon what yeast you use, but like say 029, you know, 64, 65, you know, too low and the yeast just stalls out on you, and too high and it changes the flavor. So you really, really sort of got to be able to like hold your temperature right around there. And I open ferment. So I really find that, you know, 64 open works best for cultures for me,
So like I'm low 60s and low pressure, like low pressure on that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, it could just be in my mind, but you know, I just have a feeling that I get better flavor from open ferments because the yeast moves faster. I mean, the ferment happens faster. So I get it in the tank and I'll spud it into the keg, you know, full day quicker. So in my mind, it just, I don't know, turns out to be a little bit better beer. So, but again, you know, it could just be confirmation bias, what I do.
Yeah, that fermentation pressure is, I don't know, I whatever everybody else feels like, but that's like kind of the next, I don't know, there's like gravity, temperature, pitch rate, and then like pressure is, I don't know. I might be opening up a can of worms that everybody's not interested in, but yeah, it's kind of one of those things for like, what do I take into interpretation of what might influence the flavor?
No, I've actually done a number, did a whole series, about a dozen experimental batches of pressure fermentation, warm pressure fermented lagers. I think Brian was following a thread I had back when I was over on the AHA forum on that. And I really don't see much point in it, especially, you know, on the homebrew scale. I can see it has industrial applications, but my takeaway is that the pressure that has the most impact is the hydrostatic pressure, which we are fortunate enough not to have to worry about. And I don't see any real advantage in manipulating head pressure, but do your own trials and let us know, you know.
Yeah. See, especially at like
I found out that it's a valid way to ferment, but I don't see any point in choosing it over any other method.
Right. Probably like less than like a barrel or so, where like the hydrostatic pressure is not playing as much. Like statistically not playing as much as an influence, unless I am totally misguided in that.
Yeah, I think you got to go up at least 6, 7, 10 barrels, something like that, before it starts to become an issue. And then it's a negative. It's not a positive. So we should be glad that we don't have to worry about it.
Yep. Yep. The other thing a lot of people try and do with the pressure fermentation is to, you know, partially or mostly carbonate the beer. And, I mean, there's quite a number of different ways you can do that, but not have to ferment under pressure, you know. So, I mean, there's always spunding, which I think most of us are doing here, which is kind of the easiest way to get your cake and eat it too, basically.
One thing I'll say that I, because of my experience with pressure fermentation, is that I am now with spunding, I'm a lot less picky or anal or whatever about exactly when I take it to spun, because I know that if I do, you know, I'm not looking for that half degree Play-Doh. If I'm, you know, two degrees Play-Doh before what I expect final gravity, I know it's not going to be a problem. So, you know, I know that it's going to turn out fine under pressure or not. So I just spun it a batch today. I probably should have waited till tomorrow, but you know, I needed something to do. So, and I'd hate to miss it, but right. I'd rather go early than miss it, because I know it's not going to hurt, especially since I tend to ramp up temperature towards the end. And it's an awful lot like that typical commercial program where they round, you know, they start ramping temperature and pressure around 50% attenuation. And so I'm certainly not hurting it by waiting till nearly the end.
Right.
This lockdown stuff's pretty nice, because now everybody can just like sit right by their fermenter to the exact time to transfer to spun. No excuses.
Yep.
not if it's in three in the morning, because I'm not Fran. I'm not up at three in the morning.
And I think everybody should like get their bottle spunding on right now too, because you just hang out right there until the perfect minute to transfer to the bottle.
I was checking one like every hour the other day just for shits and grins, because I didn't have anything else going on.
You're supposed to be watching yeast in your fridge and taking counts every hour, right?
Yeah, that was something.
I really look forward to more reports on that. That's something that I think is a terrific service. Thank you're doing for
Thank
us.
Thank you very much.
And right now it looks like 38 is better for
Measurement error. That's all I'm going to say. Like, I'm kind of learning how to do all this sort of stuff. I short counted those, and I probably shouldn't have. But, we're learning, so.
Nope, that's
38 awesome. Degrees is looking like maybe better than 33 for viability, or?
Yeah, I think, for 33, I had, like I said, I short counted it, but I just kind of went across the whole grid and just kind of eyeballed it. There was more dead cells there, but I don't know. We'll see what happens over the next couple of weeks.
Anyway, I'm glad you're doing it.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, it's kind of an excuse to learn how to do it, and it's very pragmatic. I can either like store it in my lager kegerator, which is 33, or I can store it in my other fridge, which is 38. So it's like, well, why not figure out which one? So
yeah. So go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Russ.
Are Dustin, are your samples done with extract? Or are they from a finished ferment?
They were pulled out of they were pulled with about a degree Plato left and sent to spawn. So I was trying to do basically what I would do if I was harvesting yeast to repitch. And so I actually have a big jar that I'm going to repitch next week or so, and I just took two smaller ones. And so it's the intent was like, what's going to happen the way I pull yeast, which I think is probably similar to what most people here are doing. So
sure. That for me was like the biggest difference in yeast longevity was, when you start spunding and your yeast go into the jar with some extract too, and I start them at like 33, and of course, they'll continue to ferment for weeks and weeks. You have to keep venting the jars to get CO2 coming off. So for me, that seemed to be the thing that extended the longevity of the yeast more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they want, right? They're coming off a huge ferment where they're oxygen and food depleted. And so you just kind of put them away with some nutrient, and they can just slowly chug and chug and chug.
The thing that like irks me reading the other forums and Facebook and so forth, are these people still talking about yeast washing? Just makes my head explode that people would still even say that word anymore.
Yeah, well,
and they it irks me even more that they don't get the difference between rinsing and washing. If they, they don't even know which one they shouldn't be doing.
Things just keep coming back up, over and over again. They will not die.
Zombies.
It's like a CO2 blanket,
Yeah, somebody right.
Write a book about things. Homebrew dogma that won't die.
I'm going to do a very selfish Minnesota, Minneapolis, Brian one, and overbuilding starters versus trying to wash yeast. It might be a very good topic to cover that expands a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I would never wash yeast, but like so the whole principles of the procedures and methods that we talk about, or I talk about, I'll just use myself as an example, is I try and be as troop free going into the fermenter as possible, because that's less nasties that are going to be in with your yeast and everything. Not only is your beer going to clear faster, it's going to make it so you never have to worry about trub in your yeast. So you never have to worry about washing or rinsing yeast. And so the way I spun, puts the yeast that you recover with yeast nutrient, wort, and so they can continue to chug and chug and chug, you know, at fridge temperatures, slowly, albeit slowly. And then when they're ready to be pitched again, it's not like they're starved and they're not going to have the crazy osmotic shock and all that kind of stuff. And it just seems to work like way better.
So yeah. If there is a small amount of non-yeast material in your pitch, you can account for that by pitching a bit more slurry. I mean, it's not like the trub is going to propagate. So
sure.
The harm you'll do by trying to separate it is probably worse than just estimating a fudge factor and pitching a little more slurry and getting the yeast at its best condition when it goes in.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I think there's kind of trying to wash. I hope everybody sees the quotes, the wash yeast.
Washes with acid, rinses with water, right?
Yeah, like overbuilding your, if you're going to do a starter, like overbuild your starter.
Oh, yeah.
You can't, and like take a chunk of slurry into a vial and regenerate from that versus trying to wash your yeast with it. It just seems to be another layer of potential, like miscalculating what's in your sample versus overgrowing a starter and continuing to build on.
Yeah, I have one objection though to overbuilding starters, and that is that you're perpetually pitching essentially a first generation from lab. You're not actually ever repitching something that has become acclimated to actual brewery conditions. And so some side-by-side comparisons of several, you know, generations taking that out would be really worthwhile, because to me it's just empirically I know my beer improves over generations to a point when it declines, and then you start a new pitch. Yeah. And
like Gen Zero,
I assume that you have that problem over. If you're overbuilding starters perpetually, but mm-hmm. I don't know that. So that'd be another interesting experiment.
Well, yeah, I agree. Anecdotally, though, I think you'll see across like our forum and everybody is saying that the first yeast pitch, even like, let's say, so like I'm a big proponent of pitching, like, let's say 5 vials of yeast on mm-hmm. a 5-gallon batch for your initial pitch or whatever it would be. One vial per gallon. We'll just call it that. That first generation, while we'll have the proper yeast count, will always be more sluggish than the repitch after. Mm-hmm. Now, why? The real question is why? Is it yeast acclimation? Is it maybe it wasn't the proper pitch rate? I mean, we're going off what the manufacturer says. I'm sure we're not actually scoping it. So do we actually know those pitch counts are accurate? So maybe it is a little bit lower pitch count. Maybe the repitch is a little bit higher pitch count. Or maybe it's the factor of all those yeast acclimation, higher pitch count. You know, that would be a good experiment as well.
Yeah, I just don't doubt that there is a factor of its adapting or acclimating or whatever you want to call it, yep, to the actual brewery conditions, that's got to be a factor and maybe not the only one. That's yeah, true.
I obviously side on the, I mean, I've been saying it for years that, I mean, I think I went, I don't know, 100 plus batches on my initial first pitch of 2206. I used it for years until mm-hmm. When I wrote the blog post on 5 packs of yeast was the time I used my 5 packs of yeast, and my last batch with L17 was the first batch I didn't use the 2206 from that blog post, which is at least 3 years old. So there, I think there is something to be said about I mean, we all grew from a single cell and we adapted. And so obviously I think there's something there. I could tell recently I haven't been brewing as much because of winter. So my yeast was getting sluggish. I wasn't getting the clarity and the flocculation that I was normally getting. So that's kind of why I picked up the L17 and said, well, let's try this.
Now, I was thinking about that, and the one I spun today is about a day after I would be accustomed to, but it's a first generation 2206. I just started new because maybe I was paranoid, but I was only like 6 or 7 generations in, and I noticed I wasn't getting the clarity that I expected. It wasn't flocking the same. So I thought, well, you know, before we all get locked down, I better go buy some more 2206. And so I've restarted and hope to, you know, I've never gone 100 generations, but 25, 30 maybe with 21, 24.
Sure.
It just keeps, once it hits its stride, it just keeps going.
Well, the thing is the way we harvest and the way we pitch, you're getting 50% new cell growth every time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you're reusing the same yeast. You're getting 50% new growth every time. So, you know, it just exponentially grows, right? And you're left with no cells from the original because they're dead and gone, and they've since, the mother and daughters have, you know, grown. So, I mean, I don't see why, as long as conditions are good, why you couldn't do this forever. You're in my mind, you're embedding in the yeast things, you're acclimating the yeast to, you know, let's say a cold fermentation temp, a short fermentation, and then they get put away in a cooler with some extract. And so they just acclimate themselves to that kind of procedure. And as long as your sanitation and whatnot is fine, I don't see why, you know, you can't go for a long time. And at that point, you're so far money ahead that, you know, if you're brewing on any kind of a schedule that's not completely random and goes with, you know, huge dips for months. I mean, think of all the money you save on yeast and yeast starters. I mean, that's insane. Just to start out, you know, you pay your $40 or whatever it is on yeast and you pitch that, and then you get 40 batches out of it or even 10 batches out of it, and you're still money ahead. So
question, don't you find that you're getting more flocculent yeast after every generation? I mean, especially with spunding.
Because
for me, especially with the open ferment, 2206, it already drops out pretty fast. But you know, after 6 or 7 generations, man, that shit, after 3 days in the tank, it was already on the bottom. So I'd have to be in there rousing, you know, just to get enough yeast, you know, in the transfer to get it to carbonate in the tank. So that's the only thing that I noticed with certain yeasts, you know, you just can't go so long.
Yeah, so that makes perfect sense, right? Because we're picking the best of the best. Your lagging yeast is going to go with your spund, right? So all your normal yeast are going to ferment and drop. Those are the strong performers. We want those guys. And it's just the serial repitch of those strong performers, because all the second level performers are in the spunding keg and they're done. And so you're selectively grooming your best performers continually. So it's only gonna, you know, it's like Olympic athletes breeding Olympic athletes, right? You just continue to breed the best. And so, which can get to a point that hurts you, right? So if you're in there having to rouse it, that's not necessarily a positive, right? So, you know, you can have, with my 2206, they were great performers. I never had to rouse. I never had to really worry about them flocculating too early or anything like that. But what I did notice is that even in the spunding keg, the slow performers weren't really slow performers anymore. You know, they were still your Division One athlete. They were, you know, so I could get the pressure levels on the keg were almost instantaneous, and, you know, it was done. So
nice.
It just, I don't know. Your open fermentation, that's a whole nother.
Yeah, obviously.
I don't know anything about it, and I think it's the coolest thing ever.
I think it just, like, is mostly entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I would suggest that anyone get into it or, you know, think that it's, like, the best way to do it. But if somebody wants to get an education on how to handle yeast, boy, that's one way to really become become one with your cells.
That's one thing I've noticed. I went for maybe 2-3 years where I just propagate new yeast every single pitch. It was grown off a plant. But then I noticed that as soon as I started just harvesting the yeast, it started getting stronger ferments, faster starts. The spunding was a lot quicker, was a lot better. And the flocculation was just so much better. So I gave up on propagating yeast off slants every single time to just harvesting and then repitching.
Yeah.
Everything has improved since I've done that.
Ryan's like 5-pack start and then keep repitching. That's genius right there.
Yeah. And then I noticed on the counts, because I was doing a cell count when I'd propagate these. I don't have the exact numbers. I'd have to look them up if I even have them still. But I noticed that when I'd grow it off a slant, it was so much smaller than just harvesting and then repitching it. I mean, not doing it is almost foolish.
Yeah.
As long as you're brewing on a regular schedule, of course.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, even if you don't, even if you, you know, go a month or two in between, you can always, like what I would do is I bought from Northern Brewer, I just bought some of that canned starter wort. And it just makes it so easy. You know, I rarely do starters, but if I go a long time, I'll, you know, just throw a can of that on, you know, in a flask and, you know, do it before brew day and it's
rock. I did that because I had my, I had been brewing a couple Kolsches for the last few weeks. And then today I brewed the pills. So I had the 2105. It had been sitting there since, I think, the 5th of May, if I remember right, what I wrote on there. But I threw it on I built a starter up quick, really, yesterday. And then I pitched it today. Well, I, you know, put it in the fridge, decanted and everything, pitched it. And within 3 hours, I'd already dropped 2 degrees. So I was like, God damn. So it was chugging along already.
Yeah, they don't follow, you know, when I did all my scoping and stuff, they don't follow the same kind of death rate and all that kind of stuff as like the washed and rinsed yeast follows because you have extract. So, I mean, they're perfectly happy just chilling in there, chomping on the sugar super slow for a long ass time. Like I've gone months without a direct pitch and still had activity within, you know, 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah. So, I think I could have pitched that one. I didn't even think I needed to throw that on a starter yesterday. Cause as soon as I threw it in there, within 30 minutes, it already started going to town. I was like, God damn, maybe I didn't waste my time.
Well, it won't hurt you, but
yeah, it's not going to hurt it.
Yeah, no, I don't know that I've gone longer than 3 months with a just a direct repitch, but I know I've gone out to that.
One thing I've noticed is Kolsch yeast. Kolsch yeast is very, very picky. It does not like to sit for very long. Even on slants, it takes forever. When I propagate it off a slant, it takes, instead of 1-2 days like 2206 does, it takes 3 days or so, sometimes 4 to get kicking. It's very, very picky. Same with when I harvest it. If I go more than 2 weeks without pitching it, I'll always throw it into a starter to get it going again.
Sure. Yeah. in the summer, I brew so much of that, that whatever you want to call it, Kolsch-like beer that you tried that, I mean, I'm brewing that every week. So I don't ever, I'm trying to think, I don't ever have to propagate it at all.
I'm going to try that yeast this summer because I've never used that one. The only time I've had it is at your house sometimes.
Seems to be kind of like the best of both worlds where it actually will flocculate. And I mean, it's still got that nice ester profile. Again, I kind of push it a little warmer because I kind of push that ester profile for my crowd, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, I've had great luck with it.
Which yeast is this?
That's the Dieter.
So that's the supposedly the 029?
Yeah, whatever they say it is.
Do you find it similar to 029 or not?
No. Not at all.
Really?
No.
So how do you see it as different? I mean, I haven't actually tried Dieter yet, so I don't know.
I'll let Dan explain it.
It doesn't have that fruitiness. Like 029 has that really fruity forwardness.
Yeah, that Gewurz demeanor and apple kind of thing working.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love it.
No, I know that yeast.
Yeah, only Gewurztraminer has that taste. It does not have that.
So Dieter does not have that kind of fruity, is that what you're saying?
It has a slight fruitiness, but if you ever drink a Gewurztraminer wine, you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's a very in-your-face, just, wow, this is some fruity-ass shit.
Yeah. No, it doesn't have that. I mean, it definitely has its own ester profile, but not. It's not like 029, no.
Which one do you prefer?
For what I'm doing, I really like the Dieter just because, number one, the people I'm serving it to, the people I'm brewing it for, don't know their ass from their elbow when it comes to a Kolsch, so it doesn't matter to them. I could use any yeast to call it a Kolsch and they'd say okay. And so it seems to pair for me, it pairs well with the Kolsch malt or the Cologne malt and the Dieter, and I push it a little warmer, like 66, 67 degrees, and it throws a very, I would say, fruity, but not like pear, I wouldn't say, not like apple, but a definite fruitiness kind of, I don't know. It's good. It's refreshing. I mean, it's, I don't know that I would call it a 100% true Kolsch, in the truest sense, but it definitely does the job of being light, refreshing, and slightly fruity, I guess.
Interesting. And this is for your body cow takeoff there?
What's that?
Just for your beer, that's the spotted cow
kind of. Yeah, that's, yep. Yep, exactly.
Actually, it was my favorite beer
from tasting. Well, you had it too? It was quite wild.
That's what I love about going out to eat here. I drink the shit out of spotted cow. That's the only time I drink it.
So, and, Russ, you had my spotted cow here?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's 100% Cologne malt and that Dieter.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's different, right? Wouldn't you agree? It's got a different ester profile, but.
I didn't really know what it was until you told me, you know.
Right.
You said it was like a takeoff of like a Kolsch and spotted cow. Before that, I've drank a lot of beer in my time, and I did not identify that, but it's a, you know, it was a really excellent beer.
Yeah, it's different. So.
So is that kind of, it sounds like it doesn't have as much of the, like the sulfite, like, I don't know if that makes sense, like that kind of like the, there's a little bit of sulfite to some of the classic Kolsch. Does that make sense?
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Okay.
I don't. you talking sort of like matchstick sulfur, kind of that faint?
Like a little bit with that fruitiness, like if you're going for the beer geeky person versus just the I want to have it with my wood fired pizza.
Oh, that's awesome. I would say no. There was no. I wouldn't say there was any sulfur in that. But again, I'm not using it in the traditional sense either. As far as a traditional Kolsch, I push it a little warmer, push it faster. I'm using that Kolsch malt. It throws a different. It's a different beer.
Right.
You'll have to ask Dan. Dan's, you know, and Russ too. They both know and love Kolsch. They've been there. They've pilgrimaged there many a time. Oh boy, he's got his hockey jersey on now.
And changed up.
Hey, there you go.
I like the Dieter versus maybe one of the other Kolsch yeast. I'm just trying to think of it. Like, it's not one of the ones that I brew, I'm going to admit, ever. But it's one of the ones where if I want to have, like, in my transition of getting people out of drinking traditional American Pilsners and just IPAs into, like, just a little bit different. I'm taking the notes of maybe that imperial yeast being possibly a little less sulfuric, which maybe I like the sulfuric, but if others are going to appreciate more of that green, that Granny Smith apple pie type of tinge to it, is good to know, you know, in that like 63 to 66 degree fermentation. Sorry, I'm totally derailing, but that's kind of like where my head is going.
So to completely change the subject, what's everybody drinking? I just popped open a Koenig Pils.
That's a good beer. I got my Pils.
More Blondale. Wait,
is that a
Bitburger?
Bitburger, awesome.
Rye whiskey.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
I'm still on my Dunkelwitch.
What is that, Rob?
I've still got my Dunkel, which I mentioned earlier. Maybe you weren't around. I brewed this planned for the beginning of spring as my nod to the days of my youth when all the big breweries brought out a so-called Bock for springtime.
Oh.
Which was really just an ordinary dark lager, but.
What's in it?
This is the official recipe, the 80-14-5-1 and a touch of cinnamon.
Yeah, everybody was confused by that. What is
it? All you need.
Yeah, that has been my go-to for since the early 90s. And when I came across it, back when Zymergy actually cared, or the AHA, they reprinted an article by Narcis that had been in Browell and on, you know, different uses of different malts and formulations, and he gave the list that there's an amended form of the table that was in that article is still in Kunza, and I picked up on that recipe, and I've played with other ones, and that's the one I always go back to for a
some of them always go down in history. What, 95.5, 85.15, 80.20, and this one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is my my dark and my go-to 80-20 before I knew any of you guys and the cult status of the 80-20 here. That's been my go-to for pale beers because, as I mentioned earlier, I'm just not a big Cara fan.
Yeah. So it's funny. We'll touch back because Nick asked about 80-20. And so what is 80-20? Well, 80-20 is 80% pills and 20% Munich.
Yeah.
So that is a malt combination that a lot of people really close to use, whether it be, you know, from 90-10 to 80-20, somewhere in there for their pilsners. And it's going to resemble very similar to like a Bitburger malt profile.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a huge difference in the 20 portion too. You know, some people like the dark Munich, some people like the Barca. Personally, I think 80-20 works best with light Munich, but that's just a personal thing. Like if you were going to make a Bitburger, I think it has to be light Munich. At least that's my take on it. Anyway.
I agree with that because I've never done the light Munich. I've only done the bark Munich, but it doesn't have that flavor. And I always just had that sneaky suspicion in my head that if I were to get light Munich, it would get me to where that Bitburger taste is.
Yeah, it's closer. That's for like a year now. That's pretty much what I've been brewing is variants of 80-20 around that theme. Just to not, you know, just to learn everything I can about that particular beer. And after trying almost every Munich, it just settled on Weyermann Light as being the closest to Bitburger. And something like, of course, the pills too, it seems to work best as a lighter pills. You know,
that's so what I was just going to ask you. I would assume it's a lighter pills, not the bark pills, because that's
too strong. No, I mean, it makes a great deal of beer with Barca, but it's just too much like a Helles, you know what I mean? Yep. It's got too much flavor.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that's where we get to take the best of both worlds, because I'd say, like, Bitburger I absolutely love. But if I were to brew it with the 80-20 bark pills, bark Munich, and then, of course, Saaz hops, to me, I'd take that over Bitburger.
Sure.
So what do you think – what does everybody think is the Bitburger blend?
It's Perla. It's Perla. Really? Yeah.
A blend? Yeah.
No, it's not a blend. Oh, I don't know what they're touting with their fucking Sierra Nevada.
So they have their – are we talking about their Oktoberfest or just plain old Bitburger?
No, straight up Bitburger.
Straight up. So they have their hop fields, their proprietary hop fields right on the border of Luxembourg. And those motherfuckers will not even talk to you. Because I have emailed them. I've talked to them. I've drove up to the hop farm to try and get some. Nope. And they want nothing to do with you. They are 100% exclusive to Bitburger. So to get, it's kind of like Pilsner Quell. If you want the true taste, you have to have the malt. So Bitburger has their own damn hop, and you ain't getting it.
So it's a hop variety, not necessarily a blend?
I think on the label it says that it's brewed with Hallertau and Bitburger Siegelhopfen. Yep. So field hops, in other words, proprietary hops. And so they do admit that there is some, so it sounds to me like it's a blend, that there is some maybe.
It's not 100% the hops from that field. So you look at a map on Bitburg and you go straight, what would it be, east. I have to look at a map. So I want to say it's southeast, east.
You'd have to go southeast to get to a big hop growing region, wouldn't you?
No, not south. It's like straight east into Luxembourg. It's not a hops growing region. That's the thing. You go straight east of Bitburg into Luxembourg and off of the B.
West. Wouldn't that be west?
West. There you go. I have to look at the map. I've been drinking a little bit. So go straight west.
But southeast, you'd get into Hallertau and the big hop region.
Yeah, west is towards the U.S. There you go. Why you get paid the big bucks. So go straight west into Luxembourg off of the B50, and there's a hop growing region, and that little small – I'm talking little small region is 100% for Bitburger, and that's their main hop variety. But they do, like you said, they do use some.
But you don't know what that variety is.
Yeah.
What my inside said was Perla. So.
When I get into that region, and I'm probably way out of date, I would be thinking that you're getting into a lot of like Strissel Spalt and things like that when you're starting to get into that geographic area.
Sure.
Or even some of the really crappy Belgian ones. But
yeah, so.
But they're obviously planning whatever they want.
Right, right. So what I was told was Perla. Single edition, right around 50 minutes from knockout, 35 IBU, and then Pils Malt and Munich to 3.5 SRM in the mash. So that's how the whole combination of like 80-20, 90-10 came about, because obviously, it's going to be dependent on, you know, HSA or the lack of. The more lack of, you can flavor load with more Munich. But then again, they are decocting. So I don't know. It's kind of almost you could probably, you might even be able to say, you know, you could go 80-20 with 1% melanoidin or something like that. If you believe that melanoidin actually would do something.
And I don't. But just to throw it all into turmoil, the one I sent to Spun today is 80-20 Barky Pils, Barky Munich. And of course, as I've mentioned earlier, I'm using American hops, which, you know, hopefully all these hops are kind of indistinct, the varieties we use.
Yep. Yep.
But I used a more complex hop schedule because I haven't since going
sure
low oxygen. I used 50% at 30 minutes, a third at 30 minutes, and a sixth at 15 minutes with whole cone. So that's nothing like what you're describing as the Bitburger hop schedule. And I swear when I tasted the sample, when I spunded it today, it is the most Bitburger-esque beer that I've ever had coming through my line. And so using the different malts, the different hop schedule, it's all a matter of process. And our process is never going to elicit the same qualities their process does from the same ingredients.
Right, so. Right. Who knows how long it takes them to knock out? Who knows how long those hops actually sit in contact? Who knows? Right. I mean, there's so many variables.
Are they really using just one addition? Are they throwing some extract in at some point? They're not going to tell you that.
In the back of the bottle, they say they use hop and hop and extract.
Yep.
Yeah,
it says that.
That's probably bittering. Yep. You know, if you read Kunz or any of the other literature, you get the idea that hop extract is probably for bittering, which suggests that they are using a late addition if they're using anything other than the extract. So.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, obviously, Dan, you've tasted it at the source, at the brewery. It's a much different beer than what we get here. I mean, it's hoppy, right? I mean, you can actually taste hops. So, you know, I don't know. It's different.
And here's the thing. When you drink it, you can go to – it's how it's poured. You can go to three different restaurants in Bitburg, and it tastes three different ways. The pour, the temperature, the age of it, it's a totally different beer. I mean, on the walk plots of Bitburg, I have three different places I always like to visit because I couldn't tell which one I like more. And then you go closer to where I lived. There's this little bar there that pours the best Bitburger you ever drank in your life. I mean, it's better than drinking it at the brewery. It changes so much in flavor because it's that, I don't know, perfect, that precise. I don't know what the word is.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. Drinking in Bitburger at their own tap house there is probably one of the worst glasses of Bitburger I've ever had. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny because it's supposedly right from the brewery, but it wasn't really all that good.
Yeah, and at that tap house, it goes through, I'm not sure what year, because they've been changing it up, but it goes 90s. Through the distributors before it gets to their tap house, and that's what's crazy.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah, it makes no sense. You go to the small gas houses or pubs in Bitburg or outside the local area, and it tastes better than at the actual brewery.
This is like one of those situations where you like this corruption of this three-tier system where the producer isn't allowed to directly distribute. It has to go through something, but so somebody else might actually get it fresher, you know.
Yeah.
Like I know a local distiller here that has to sell to the state and then buy back. And so maybe the tap house isn't the most direct. Maybe it.
Yeah, 100%. Plus, it's how you pour it. So I've been talking with this guy on Beer Advocate. He lives in Trier, which is maybe 20-30 minute drive from Bitburg, depending on traffic. And he was dead set on he did not like Bitburg because he had it in Trier. In Trier, there's a couple places that pour a good beer for a good Bitburg, I should say. So he was in Eerdorf, which is just down the hill from Bitburg, and he had the beer there, and he talked about how it was a slow pour, and he said he never had a Bitburger that tastes so good. And I'm like, that's exactly my point. You go to the right place, it's going to taste good. And he said he was so impressed by it, he went into Trier, to his normal place, to have another Bitburger. He drank it, and he said it was nothing like – he said it didn't even resemble the same beer, and that's what's so crazy about this beer is how it's poured, the temperature. So much goes into how you get this beer to be at its prime.
So, Dan, question, have you drunk much Wernesgrüner in Germany?
I haven't, no. Not really. I've drank maybe a bottle or two when I was just completely shit-faced, and that's about it.
I drank a lot of that, and it reminds me of like what Bitburger would taste like if it was, you know, the full decoction route.
Yeah.
But most people haven't ever tried it, so I thought maybe living in Germany you had.
Wernesgrüner is the only reason I've ever been inside an Aldi.
I was just going to say.
When I heard that they had this beer that I'd never had anywhere else, but I heard it, you know, I'd heard of it, and so I've gone in there, and I will occasionally go in, buy a six-pack if it – and that's it.
The bottles are, like, okay, but, like, fresh on tap is, like, I don't know, orgasmic almost.
That's like that Koenigs that you have.
Yeah.
That beer, I was never crazy about it. I had it in the bottle a few times, but then my aunt and uncle came to Germany, so we met him. I forget where it was, Rudesheim. And the place we were eating dinner at had that beer on tap. I drank it. I was like, God damn, this is some good beer. But when you have it out of the bottle, it's not nearly as good.
Definitely.
So did that answer your question about 80-20, Nick?
You know, it's I'll put it like this, is that everything is so interesting, is that there's I'm an analyst, so everything always impacts something else. And so for me, it's always like, okay, hey, I can take into consideration a malt or a yeast and a temperature. And everything impacts something else in the flavor profile, and that's what makes it fun. So yes, it helps, and I apologize for everybody watching me like with my head down do like, hey, here's something else that if I have the opportunity to do it, I want to do it, because like I have this Pilsner piece where I want to profile out that, like, when it sounds stupid, but the first part of it is like getting people to go beyond like lagers, beyond Coors, and then like get people to go beyond IPA, is beyond like the New England piece, and like hazy IPA isn't the only way to get like hop character. So for me, this is really fun, and I thank you all. So yes, it definitely helps.
Yeah, no problem. This is all we do is talk about beer.
Hey Brian, you been to the Gasthof lately?
Not for about 6 months, probably.
Oh, I miss that place.
I know. Tim, you been there?
No, I haven't been in a while. Their beer's kind of stale.
Well, they got long hose lines, but looking at the tap handles, it's kind of like porn.
It is.
Yeah. That's right in Nick's wheelhouse.
Gasthof's is... I need to have a couple before I enjoy Gasthof's. How does that sound?
Yeah. It's a sad day. It's sad. But
really? So what is the go-to German place in Minneapolis?
I actually go over the border to Wisconsin and to the Winzerstube in Hudson, just over the border. Yeah. Better food, fresher beer.
Huh. How long of a trip is that?
From Minneapolis, half an hour.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, it's not.
Is that like the direction of Apple River?
Yeah, it's just right across the river.
I have a soft spot for Shells, so every lager influenced beer that I do, I use Shells as my barometer, for the good or bad of it. That's kind of what I do.
Summit has the, what is it, the Dakota Soul? That beer is so damn good.
That beer and their color pills, I'm sorry, is so enjoyable. Yes. Yeah. Yes. The Dakota Soul and the Killer Pills from Summit. I enjoy whether it meets qualifications or not.
That Dakota Soul is, yeah. If I was in the Czech Republic and looking for a good pills, that would stand up there with the best.
Yeah. The one thing, like Summit, I feel like they've replaced their traditional pills with that Keller pills. And while the Keller pills are all right, I did really like their traditional Czech pills. But that it seems like it has gone away for the other varieties.
Is it the what is it, the ESB, the extra special bitter? That was the one that Brian had recommended me. I was in the cities maybe 2 months ago, and we had a restaurant and they had it on tap, so I drank it. I was like, god damn, this is a pretty good beer.
It is. So EPA is one that I'm gonna qualify this one. If you can get it pretty fresh, is a fantastic beer, and if it sits a while, it turns into, why is everybody so excited about Summit Brewing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my piece on somebody who really thinks that, because I like the English influence of Summit. I really wish that it would remain more fresh than it can be at sometimes.
Yeah,
Summit Extra Pale is my Minneapolis airport beer. Like, if I'm connected to Minneapolis, I like duck into the first bar I can find and put down a couple Summit Extra Pales. I used to live around there, so it's
Yeah, if you find it fresh, it is like that Centennial Cascade shines through, and if it sits, it turns flat, and that's the hardest part is like when I've had friends come from San Diego and we've gone to Summit and they're like, oh yeah, this is amazing, and then we go to some place like, I hate to say it, Red Cow, who has dozens of the freshest beers, but EPA might sit for a little bit and they're like, oh, this isn't as good as we had it over at, you know, over at Matt's.
Sure. Or
something. Yeah, that's kind of the, it is, I will say, it's one that freshness, I think, definitely, like all beers, freshness influences it to a great degree.
So I used to live in Michigan, just another example of this sort of thing, and we used to get Bell's Oberon fresh, and it's not a beer I would ever buy anywhere else, but it was fucking spectacular. Like, hot day, you get a pitcher of Oberon, amazing. You get it anywhere else in the country, it's just kind of very mediocre.
We randomly, I don't know how, we got some of those little, you know, the little, like, 2-liter, like, fun party kegs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were, like, 4 weeks old. I don't know how we got them. And, like, yeah, like, Oberon, it's, like, Oberon, Two-Hearted, like, the, and even, like, so I will do this. So I went out to Boston, and I went to the Sam Adams tour, and that was, like, my eye-opening of, like, oh, my Lord, beer aging greatly impacts the flavor. And yeah, like the Oberon 2-liter keg that we got, that was, I think it was like 4 weeks, within 4 weeks of its like packaging date or whatever they had on it. And it was like, oh, this is amazing. Why don't we have this more often? It, you know, it's kind of beer age impacts so much. And it's, it allows for a geekiness, and it allows for kind of allows you to seem like you're a dick at the same time. But it really can change the entire experience, which is, I don't know. I'm going way philosophical, but it's what makes beer fun for me.
You're not going too far. Because if you want that in the extreme, I spent a few years in England. And of course, with cask ale, you go in on a Monday and then on a Tuesday and on a Wednesday, and you philosophically discuss the changes. And hopefully by Tuesday night, that cask kicks and the landlord puts a new one on, because it's not going to make it to Thursday. But, you know, that's the extreme of watching what oxidation does. And there is something to appreciate about each stage of it to a point. And so you have a good point there. And that's one of the possible arguments against low oxygen. If there are any, you know, I mean, it shows that there's more than one way to judge a beer.
How long did you spend in England, Rob?
I was there for about 3 years, a little longer, and from 87 to into mid 1990.
So you've eaten some Indian
Oxford and London. Sorry, you were saying, Russ?
Oh, I said, so you've eaten some Indian food then?
Yes. You know, that was kind of a shock. My first night when I had gotten in, you know, from the airplane, I was going up to Oxford, and I got in, and my first evening walking through the streets, and the whole damn city was just assaulting your nostrils with curry. It was, you know, you don't notice it after a bit, but that was sort of a new a new thing to me my first night there. So
I spent some time in England. I've never had English food, but I've had a lot of good Indian food.
Well, you know, it's really the same thing. Oh. I mean, it is kind of the national.
I think Indian food is English food.
The most famous to Americans, we think you ask an American a English or an Indian dish, they're going to say chicken tikka masala. That is Indian the way chop suey is Chinese. Chicken tikka masala is probably the national dish of England. It doesn't even mean anything. You know, it does. Chicken tikka means bite-sized pieces and masala means spice. And it's just purely an English invention. And so, yeah, it's... They really did import a lot of their culinary influences from their colonies.
Oh, Brian, you have a whole new channel of English Indian influence versus Indian food. I have a really close friend of mine plays an Indian drum, and so he spent 9 months in New Delhi, and it is like that whole English curry and Indian food thing, so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazingly fascinating and super dorky.
Well, I'm a dork, so.
And it makes, in part of me, like, I want to build like a true Indian clay pot
grill. Tandoor oven.
Yes, but that, like, I can't really, because it's going to be English influenced. And it's on my, until I get my actual smoker temperature controller and Arduino code figured out, it falls a little bit in priority.
So, Rob, what do you think about Kingfisher?
I think I've had it. I can't remember, but I remember the guy that owned that brewery bought Mendocino, expanded it to a site in the east, and then killed it. And that was one of the early American craft brewers that I really liked some of their stuff. And they were winning medals in England too, as I recall. So I don't know whatever happened, you know, what the backstory of how that collapsed.
Collapsed? Kingfisher?
No, Mendocino. There was some guy who had an investor who had bought Kingfisher, that brewery in India, and then he bought Mendocino.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's
a expanding it, and then it quickly collapsed.
I thought it was a pretty decent beer coming from India. You know, I don't expect much coming from that country, but it was actually a pretty good lager.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. I just don't recall that. I just remember the story of they bought out one of the few that was attempting some sort of English style still out in California. And
gotcha.
And somehow that didn't go well.
Well, I'm tasting this Helles made with L17, and I can't explain. I don't know. It's in the aroma. Like, you can pick it up. Do you get that? Anyone else who's used the L17, can you pick up that L17, like the Augustiner aroma?
Of course.
Yeah. Like, I can pick it up in the nose right away in the foam and everything. And I can't almost, like, I don't know if, like, a slight apple-y flavor. I don't know if that's the right descriptor. It's so hard.
It's been so long since I've been able to get any Augustiner, let alone fresh. It's been a few years. My local store is quit carrying it. But my memory, I seem to remember something almost lemony.
Yeah, that could be.
It's struggle to describe it. I struggle to describe it. I have no descriptors that if you look at a flavor wheel and try to find something on there that's Augustiner, it should be its own, you know, sector on the flavor wheel.
It's something. I don't know if fruity is the right word. I don't know if lemony is the right word. I don't know if citrusy is the right word. I don't know.
And good or bad, that's a hard thing to decide too. I mean, is it a pleasing flavor or a distracting flavor? I can't decide.
For Augustiner, I've never used the L17 yeast, but it has a very distinct, as soon as you guys start talking about it as Augustiner, and then today how, I think it was you, Russ, who had mentioned, if you're going to use it for Hellas, use it, but for Pils, don't use it. It really struck a chord with me that it's just a very distinct taste that if you've drank a good amount of Augustiner, you know what it is. And I haven't used L17, but I feel like I know what it would taste like if I used it, which makes me want to stick with 2206 and 2105, what I've been using.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, the yeast itself is like, you know, so easy to use. I mean, it's not finicky and it has no sulfur and diacetyl is non-existent. And so, I mean, it's just, you know, bulletproof yeast. Unfortunately, it has a flavor to it.
So the interesting thing for me when I'm tasting this, that yeast taste is right in the front, right in the initial swallow. Like it's in the aroma, but right as I swallow, that's when I pick it up. And it's that, I don't know if citrusy is the right word, something is there, but it fades quickly to, you know, nice malt flavors and aromas and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of goes away. But that initial, I'll just call it estery. That initial estery hits me right when it gets into my mouth. But I can't put my hand on or put my mind on what it actually is. So like I said, I don't know if it's bad. I wouldn't call it bad. I'd call it different. It's definitely different. Signature. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. And even my warm fermented beer that I did is very similar. No, it's not phenolic. It's
I think I'm going to have to get it just to use it with Dunkel because I absolutely love the Augustiner Dunkel. So I'll pick up a pack of it and try it with the Dunkel because I always have Dunkel on tap. So my next Dunkel I'll do with L17 to give it a try to see if it is actually that Augustiner taste.
You know, I've had Augustiner Dunkel and it doesn't, that flavor doesn't seem to be very prominent in there. I mean, it's mostly in their Hellas, in their Edelstein. I mean, that's where it really kind of jumps out at you.
Yeah,
stuff,
I'm not sure how well it would work with a Dunkel. I think it would be distracting almost from the, you know, like the sweet malt, you know, and the I don't know. I think a Hellas is like the best place for it. It's just my personal opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Edelstoff's its own beast anyways. It's not your traditional kind of Hellas anyways, so it's God, what is that flavor?
Yeah.
I mean, the hard part for me is it pretty much evaporates after I swallow. When the beer is in my mouth, that's when I pick up the ester. And then it fades really fast to really nice malt and sweetness for the Helles. Not a hell of a lot of sweetness. It's a really nice Helles. But I'm just trying to, what is that flavor? What is that?
You guys are letting me down so, so much right now. Honestly.
Speechless. You got a speechless dude.
Yeah. Well, I have had my daughter screaming in the background. So I can finally talk now. But this is going to be my first time using it tomorrow, but I don't know. Like on my post, I've just had issues with the 2206. I don't know if it's something I'm doing with the yeast there. So I'm going to try the L17 and then, if that goes good, then I know something I was doing with the 2206. If not, then I have to look at, the rest of my process, but we'll see. But I hate, I'm a big fan of, non-yeast characteristics, I guess.
I know what you're saying.
I don't know. Just, it's, I want it to be sort of, not like the single piece of what I'm, tasting. You know what I mean? Sort of in the fort. And that's kind of sounds like what this is I don't know if it's, who knows.
I know what you're saying. And yes, you will notice this yeast. It doesn't take a backseat. I mean, it does for me after you swallow, but when that beer's in your mouth, that ester is there. And when I'm smelling it, it's definitely there. More so, I could really pick it up in the foam. And now the foam is a little bit lower and not pillowing. So it's a little bit harder to pick up, but it was definitely in the foam. Smelling the foam, it was like, yep, that's exactly what it is. Is it off-putting? No. Is it? I don't know. It's different because, for me, my 2206 had a slight bit of sulfur to it, and this definitely has no sulfur. I would say this has no sulfur. I don't know. It's just really different. I guess you'll have to try it. You'll love it or you'll hate it.
Yeah. We'll see.
I think I suggested using it, if you're trying to figure out where in your process you're going wrong, if it's some kind of yeast problem. If you use L17, there's almost no way you can screw it up. I mean, it's tolerant to low pitches. It's tolerant to a wide range of temperatures. It doesn't really produce any sulfur. It doesn't produce diacetyl. So, other faults that you would, or mistakes that you would make, that 2206 is not forgiving, L17 is forgiving. So if you're trying to sort out your process and decide if it's, your mashing or your yeast, at least this way you could determine it, I guess is what I was thinking.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's why I'm trying something different. So it's the Omega's version of it though, not the Imperial for whatever. I don't know if there's any difference, but it's same yeast strain though.
I've never used the Omega.
Yeah, well, I just started a run. I'm going to do, I don't know how many with L17. If you want to trade some beers and just kind of shoot the shit a little bit and see what we think, that'd be awesome if we ever get out of quarantine.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you suggesting that I break quarantine?
We'll just find an empty park and I'll leave my beers in the trash can.
Yeah, went out with a bottle.
Come back,
do a dead drop next to the mailbox. Nice move.
Oh man, yeah, that's yeah, that'd be good.
Are you both in St. Louis?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Dustin actually gave me some of the zinc that I've been using.
Oh, nice. Did that come from the group buy?
Yeah, no, I bought it from Carolina Biological Supply or something. It's one of those deals where for $20 you get like 15 lifetimes worth of zinc. So,
yep. Cool. Yeah.
Clandestine zinc drop off at one of the homebrew shops.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're going to have to do. Yeah. With the.
I guess they got to find a reason to use all of these things.
What are you doing with that?
They're from like a homebrew competition, but we have like dozens of these egg cartons that hold bottles.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah. Just start shipping beers.
Shit, I thought you were starting a weed farm or something.
Six in one, half dozen of the other. It's all cold packed.
That's funny. Oh, man. Yeah, well, no, that's cool. Did that come from the NBA?
Comp? Yeah, from the comp. Yeah, that we had like, I don't know, 300 entries for or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah.
You working at a brewery or where are you at?
So our homebrew club has a homebrew competition every December. Mm-hmm. So we're in Northeast Minneapolis. I live in Southwest Minneapolis, so Minnesota.
Perfect. Then.
Not that far from Bryan. So
where at? What city?
I'm in Minneapolis, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. So the Wild, I'm all good on. Are you localish?
No, I grew up in that whole area, so
okay.
I'm kind of curious where you are because one of my sisters live in Champlin. The other one's in Brooklyn Park. Which one's a good one, Brooklyn Park or Brooklyn Center?
Yeah, so you're they're doing this.
Yeah.
I'm south of Lake Harriet, so.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the area, so that was kind of curious.
So once I can actually leave and go on my bike tours to all the tap rooms, I'm going to be relieved.
Yeah, and Nick and I are part of the same homebrew club too.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
Northeast Brewers Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys all in the Minneapolis area? All the Minnesota people?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I would be considered a suburb. I'm about half hour, 35 minutes northwest of the cities.
Okay. Kind of like halfway between like Alexandria and Minneapolis?
Yeah, kind of halfway in between, yeah. I mean, Alec for me is still, I don't know, probably a solid hour and a half.
Oh, okay.
So you're at least an hour plus.
Yeah,
I went to. I grew up in South Dakota and went to college in Fargo. I had some really good friends from Alexandria.
We're at in South Dakota.
Mobridge?
No shit.
You actually know where that is?
Of course. Yeah. I'm from South Dakota.
Where?
I'm from Milbank.
Oh, Jesus. We used to play you guys in sports and stuff all the time.
I know.
I got a funny story about South Dakota. You want to hear it? So for work, I had to go down to Nebraska. It was a driving adventure, which is no big deal. I think it was like 8 hours, but I had a bunch of stops in Iowa. We have I work for an internet service provider, and I'm in the fiber optics side, the transport side. So I am in new turnups and stuff like that. So we're constantly trying to grow our network and get redundant internet links and all that fun stuff. So we went to a big data center in Nebraska, and I had to go down to Nebraska. Well, so we go down to Nebraska and we stayed at the Embassy Suites there, right? And God, where was it? What's the big town in Nebraska? Whatever.
Lincoln? I don't
know.
Omaha?
Omaha. Yeah, Omaha. So we stay at the Omaha, Embassy.
The College World Series.
Yeah, exactly. So we stay at the Omaha Embassy, which apparently has open bar from like 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., which doesn't really faze me because I'm an adult and I was on work, but it definitely fazed the rest of my coworkers who got puking drunk in the lobby bar by about 8 o'clock. And so we go down there. The next morning, we have a big meeting at this data center, and so we get to that after I wrangle up all these degenerates. And we go to that. Well, so we have that meeting, and that's all fine. So we get to Sioux City. So we get done. We turn around. A bunch of the people make it to Sioux City, Iowa, before they start throwing up hungover. And in Sioux City, Iowa, I believe there's two different interstates, one that takes you to South Dakota and one that takes you to Minnesota. And because of my degenerate coworkers and having to babysit them, we had to stop in Sioux City, Iowa for them to throw up. And after that, I had to follow one of them. Well, I wasn't paying attention. And instead of Minnesota, I ended up in South Dakota. So, yeah. And I didn't realize it till all of a sudden I looked at a speed limit sign and it was like 80 miles an hour. And I was like, what the fuck? I didn't see this on the way down. This is in Iowa. And I looked at my GPS and it was like, no, I'm in South Dakota. So I had to go to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, then cut back across, and it added like an hour and a half into my journey home. So I got to see a lot of South Dakota.
Yeah, a lot of fields.
Yeah, and it was windy as ever living shit.
Yep. Like hills and fields and wind.
Yep. Yeah, it was, I thought my, I have like a Ford Escape from my work, and I'm pretty sure I thought I was going to blow off the road at 80 miles an hour and probably a 40 plus mile per hour headwind. Yeah, it was a great time.
Oh. So Dan, you know where Oconomowoc is?
Yeah.
Wisconsin?
Yep.
That's Wisconsin. Where I grew up.
No shit.
Yeah. Been to Madison a bunch of times.
Yeah.
What?
And of course, I know where Maders is when you talk about that.
What city were you born in, and what's your social? Credit card number would be good too.
We'll get you much.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
After living in Germany for so long, Wisconsin is ideal because it's along the same lines of everyone wants to drink. Everyone wants to go out and have fun, like, you know, bike, walk, you know, get out and be active, but drink while you do it. I'm like, hell yeah, this is money. Oh. So I ain't leaving this state forever.
Yeah, that's funny. Growing up there, I couldn't wait to get the fuck out of Wisconsin.
That's why I'm with South Dakota, but now I was like, man, I love South Dakota.
So yeah, those fields are pretty awesome.
Yeah. A few times every summer we go to Pepin, Wisconsin, to the Stone Barn Pizzeria. And so from Minneapolis we make the river run, Stone Barn Pizza. I think it's a Pepin, Wisconsin. Worth going to have a couple of Moon Man, New Glarus.
Yeah, Moon Man is money.
Yep, there you go. Some wood-fired pizza in a brick oven, pizza oven in a looks like the tornado blew off the barn.
Oh, I was just by there this winter. Yep, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, you got to go in the summer though, while they're open. The pizzas,
yeah, they were definitely not open.
Yeah.
I can't remember where the hell we ended up, but we ended up at some backwoods. So my son wanted my son's a big fan of cheese curds. And my in-laws.
Yep.
Me and your son have that in common.
Yeah. So my in-laws live in Cottage Grove, Minnesota, which is, you know, 20 minutes away from the border. So we were down there for the holidays, and it was like I took a like 2 weeks off work, and we had, and my wife's a teacher, so they had winter break, and so we had literally nothing going on. So I said to my son, his name's JD, I said, JD, now's your time. Let's go get some cheese curds. So we drove into Wisconsin with no plan whatsoever. But I didn't stop in Hudson because I'm like, Hudson's basically Minnesota, so what's the point? And so we kept driving, and we drove for another like 45 minutes. And I don't even know where we ended up. But I know that we raided a fireworks store and spent a couple hundred dollars there. Unexpectedly. And then I swear for some reason we drove semi close to Pepin, and I can't remember why, but yeah, we hit all sorts of little towns over there.
So your son will be happy to know I did my undergraduate at River Falls.
Yep. I had a girlfriend in marketing there.
And to make him feel better, my payment for one of my projects that I did was a 5-pound bag of cheese curds that that my two
well negotiated good sir.
Yeah, they were the squeaky cheese curds.
Yep.
You all went through the right area.
Yeah.
Of yep. Ellsworth, you did Ellsworth and you went down.
Yep.
Cheese curd capital of yep. North America. You did your son well. So.
Yep.
I just got to stop talking about cheese curds. Every time you say that, I think of the Minnesota State Fair.
Oh, baby. That's right, that's Ross. Good. When you were here that one time, I sent you there.
That was the best place ever.
Is that the place where they like fry everything and you get like fried butter steaks or something nasty?
Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's fried.
Oh, no. You fry it? You walk around with your cardboard taster of Minnesota beers. Hopefully you chose the right foursome.
Shit, I got German beers there. They had Polliner Hefeweizen on tap. Yep.
So I go to the Summit one, you get your Summit taster, and then you go to the fried, all the fried things. Yeah, you're going to be okay.
Yep.
You don't build this temple in non
and that place was heaven.
Yeah.
One of my best friends in college was from Minnesota. And in fact, she married one of my other best friends from college. I was a groomsman in the wedding the one time I've been to Minneapolis. From the time we met, became friends, you know, beginning of freshman year, all I heard about was Pronto Pups, Pronto Pups, Pronto Pups, Minnesota State Fair. And I've come to realize since that it is pretty much probably the top state fair in the country, right? I mean, it's
I think us
it is the most elaborate laid out. Yeah,
Minnesota and Texas are like the two, and yep, it is the corn dog versus the Pronto Pup. And
I've been indoctrinated. It's got to be a Pronto Pup. Yeah,
we define our friendship.
That's the original, right? Pronto Pup was the original.
Minnesota, okay there.
Yeah.
If I gave you any indication on how long I've been in Minnesota, it is the Pronto Pup versus the corn dog.
Oofda.
Oh, and it always goes better with the corn dog, no matter what it is, Fest beer, Pilsner, corn dog. It goes better with the corn dog.
It's life in general, man. The corn dog.
Yeah, that's true.
got really quiet.
My cat has just been going around. I don't know when she learned this trick, but she's just gone through half the house here, turning off light switches. I think I'm getting a hint.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she started bringing you beers.
No, I wish. But she just went and she turned off the for a little illumination here. I realized I was in the dark last week, so I had the next room. I had the lights on. She just went and turned them off. Got up on a table, reached up the wall. Must be time.
Yeah. I just found the cat's thread on Homebrew Talk.
Oh, yeah.
You're in Ohio, right, Ron?
Three cats, so.
Yeah, I'm. Sorry, what?
I said we have three cats. I saw that. I was like, oh, my God. Like, these are my people.
I've just got the one, but she does have a few pictures up on that thread on Homebrew Talk.
Where? Okay, so I heard Iowa, Rob.
Ohio.
Ohio.
Oh, Ohio. Never mind then. Scratch that.
Straight right in Ohio.
I will scratch my all of my Iowa, Northern Iowa endeavors.
No, I'm Ohio. Well, now my PC is telling me my battery is about to go. So with between the cat turning the lights out and the PC about to turn itself off, I guess I ought to check out and I'll see you all next week.
Take it easy.
Thanks, Rob. Let's chat with Rob.
Yeah, so with that being said, I can leave this open. Otherwise, we can call that. We can whatever we want to do. Otherwise,
it's time for me to head.
Yeah, same bat time, same bat channel next week. So,
thanks again for doing this, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
No problem, guys.
Take it easy.
See you next week.
Talk to you later.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.